to Free Talk Live on this live Saturday edition of the program. The number for you to join us here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Yeah, it's Ian here with you.
And Pigless Mountaineer.
And I am the Reverend Captain Kickass.
You still in studio mode there, Captain?
Yeah, I've been doing musical things, and so I'm like, oh, I'm in a studio again. I got to keep being musical somehow.
You weren't doing singing, though, while you're out there,
no,
were you?
No, not so much. I do have some lines for some of the stuff we were working on, but, you know.
We missed you last week. Glad to have you back.
Hey, thanks, and thanks for everybody for filling in, Ian, sure. On Sunday specifically. You kept the flame alive. Thanks, you're doing, man. The, like, and we're backs and all that kind of stuff.
Did my best. I did
and
my best.
Peakless and Nobody doing the Beard Talk Live.
Yeah, you, filling in like a Domino's pothole.
Yeah.
You were, wow, that's a really obscure reference, but it's a good one.
Probably accurate, too.
It's referencing Domino's actually going around filling in potholes in cities because the government was doing a crappy job of it.
Yeah.
That was
and they're the only ones that have the time and the money to grease those wheels to get the permission to do this thing without going to jail for it.
Yeah, that was an amazing story. I wonder if they're still doing that.
If the listeners are lucky, there'll be a Beard Talk Live tonight.
Yeah, that's
I
the
suspect
plan.
So, yeah.
There better be.
Since at least two of three beards are here.
Yeah, including the one that actually knows how to work computers.
I mean, my wizardry still exceeds yours when it comes to first chair, but you
pulled it off
good, man.
Last week.
He did pretty good.
So welcome to the program. The phones are open. We're going to get into the latest from the Nord Stream pipeline explosion. There's been an update.
There's more?
Yeah. Wait, there was an explosion?
Well, Seymour Hersh, the guy that, this was in September. You didn't hear about that?
No, I did. I thought there was another one.
No.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like one of the pipelines was still somehow left intact because most probably because when they set the explosives there, they got corroded.
Did they screw up?
Well, it turns
out
that if
you blew up the whole thing, they only blew up half of it.
Yeah, well, you know, it turns out when you leave sensitive equipment in seawater, it tends to rust. So
over a period of months.
Yeah.
So we can talk more about the latest on that. It ties into a story you've got, Pikless, about what Putin is apparently putting into Belarus, which could be dangerous. And then the latest on the banking disaster that is still unfolding. Mm-hmm. We can talk about what's going on there. But let's go to the phones first to someone calling themselves The Situation in Oregon. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hear me now.
Gotcha.
10-4. Yeah, I was calling. I don't know what time or day it is over where you're at. Sometimes I get your show like a day or two late. So last I heard on the radio, you were talking about the bank collapses.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And the bailout, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was going to bring up, you know, they call it a contagion or whatever. It's the same old COVID China virus playbook is what they're going to use here.
What do you mean?
They've been using it. Well, just how they're like, we're not going to require vaccinations, and then they require them. You know, all this. It's really nothing. It came from this, not from that.
Well, it is interesting, to the caller's point, it is interesting that when these articles about finance and banking are referring to sort of the domino effect, right? One of these banks fails, and it affects some other banks and some other stuff. They refer to that sort of secondary effect as a contagion or the contagion, right? So if FTX failed and it affected a bunch of crypto businesses, they would refer to that as the contagion effect of FTX. And so now with SVB and what are the other banks? I can't remember.
Signature Bank,
Silicon Valley. There was another C because it was the CCC.
No, it was, SI. This would have been... Silvergate.
That was Silvergate. Silvergate. Yes, thank you. And then Credit Suisse.
Oh, Credit Suisse. Right. So for these four banks, at least, as they fail or otherwise have financial troubles, they are referring to the secondary effects, how that affects other banks, as the contagion, which I find really weird in a financial community and financial periodicals, in financial writers, to be referring to it as a contagion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there seems to be a very careful use of language that ties together, on the one hand, the Great Reset, right, which is, you know, the financial change that is occurring right now, is tied into that sort of zero COVID policy, which is tied into the zero carbon policy, which you got to think for a second. Do you know how it is possible to completely eliminate a human-specific virus? Oh, you have to eliminate all the humans. So that's the how you do that.
Where were you going with this, the situation? I'm not really clear.
I was just pointing out some, basically it's another pandemic. You know, it's affecting banks worldwide. You know, like everybody's saying, the world banks are invested in the U.S. dollar and treasury notes, and they're worthless, and all the nations that are holding them are basically part of the house of cards.
Well, in this case, I'm happy to see the banks contract this particular problem, mm-hmm. because I am no fan of the centralized banking system, and don't care how many of them go down.
Well, and there's a strange parallel here too, because there has been question as to whether or not the coronavirus actually existed or not. Mm-hmm. All of this really fundamentally comes down to the question of whether this money exists or not. And all of this has been caused by the lockdowns that were the so-called solution to that pandemic before.
What I think is really great is, for the first time, I think more, we'll say, common people, regular people, people who don't listen to Free Talk Live on the regular, mm-hmm. are beginning to question what is the existence of money.
Right.
And so that will lead people down like a rabbit hole.
You think so?
I think so. I think once they figure out that, like, hey, cash, like, is physical and tangible and I can hold mm-hmm. it in my hand. But these numbers in these computers that these bankers and governments are doing they're just fiction. They're just made up. They're not real. They don't exist. They're numbers on a ledger that they control.
Do you think average people are even paying attention to this story?
Well, so here's the thing.
I think more of them
actually,
are.
It's actually, well, they are starting to.
Because the whole of the thing, banking situation.
Yeah, the whole thing is kept up by them not paying attention to it. Mm-hmm, so right. As weird as it is, our entire, the global financial system is based on the placebo effect. As long as people believe that it works, mm-hmm. it continues to work. Like what happened in 2008 was nothing more or less than they actually looked at the book. They actually looked at whether the ratings reflected whether these mortgage-backed securities were worth anything. And when you actually looked at the books, you found out that, oh, no one is paying their mortgages. So these aren't actually worth anything. So it was Wile E. Coyote looking down and discovering that he was, in fact, no longer on that side of the cliff. And that's exactly analogy. How our entire financial system works. It functions in the same way as a placebo. Mm-hmm. And the second you start questioning it, it stops working.
So
that's part of my point, is that's how the China virus thing got carried away with all the sheeple. Everybody going, oh, yeah, they're telling us this and we believe them. It's the same thing.
I think that's absolutely true. I think in that case, would that be the nocebo, where they actually got themselves
exactly.
sick by worrying about
exactly.
coronavirus?
And to some extent, and we don't know exactly what extent to which this was the case, but to certainly some extent, it was being stressed out, being worried about it, mm-hmm. and
staying home,
yeah,
staying out of the sunlight.
Staying out of the sunlight, staying out of social situations, mm-hmm. because our immune system is actually very much keyed to being around others. That's how our bodies know that we're safe from tigers and that they can bother to repair their organs. So all of these responses were at least somewhat
started off with a 2-week quarantine. Okay, everybody just hide out for 2 weeks and it'll be over.
Right.
And then it went on and on and on. And the vaccine for this virus that they have now is going to be, you have to wear a mask in a bank. And
well, now they're not allowing that. Now the banks are finally back to the point where they don't want you to wear a mask.
I was going to say, I have a Twitter from an NYC bank where somebody took a photo, and I was like, this is from Colonel Angus on Twitter. I have no idea who this person is. There's a photo, and the caption says, "Can you say full circle?" And it's got a big hand, like, mm-hmm. stop, big-handed. In the hand, it says, due to NYC uptick in crime, and then the lower half says, if you wear a mask, no entry.
Go through the drive-thru.
No, if you wear, you can't go into the bank if you're wearing a mask now.
That's great.
In New York, apparently, due to an uptick in crime.
Surprise.
They don't mention whether or not it's institutional crime, like bankers and the Federal Reserve, or if
ever
it's like street crime.
This.
Yeah.
Thank you, the situation for the call.
One more thing. The actual vaccine for the banking problem is going to be, like you guys talk about, that you're going to have to be registered into this electronic banking thing where no more cash.
Well, that's not. Oh, I see. Yeah, the vaccine from their perspective. But the actual solution would be to get your money out of the system and put it into alternatives that the system cannot reach. Thank you for the call tonight. The situation.
Well, so the actual solution to the possibility of a virus running around was to defy them completely, be social, go in the sunlight, go to the gym. That was the actual solution. What the proposed solution was to get this weird unknown thing injected into you. And in the same case, here, the actual solution.
And then again, and again, and again.
Right, right.
Now every year they want it.
Yeah. Now here, the actual solution is a social solution. Know your friends, have a community where you trade with each other, where you use something other than the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, to use something other than their prescribed solution by using cryptocurrencies to trade with the rest of the world. And their proposed solution will very likely end up being to have a chip injected into you that will be part of the central bank digital currency system.
If you want to join the show, you can hear the number 603-283-6160. Let's come back to the banking thing because World War III is probably a little more important than that, although they're both pretty big stories and both very, very important. And we talked a couple, maybe a few weeks ago, about the Seymour Hersh 5,000-word report, I think it was.
Not to be confused with the Seymour Butts.
He published.
Under the Bleachers publication.
Seymour Hersh, of course, a longtime journalist, investigative reporter who's been reporting since before I've been alive. This guy was, you know, reporting back in the Vietnam War.
He's old school.
Yeah, he's literally in his 80s. And
okay.
He's still out
Respect.
There, still doing this just really just amazing work of uncovering the real stories. And he came out with a lengthy report on his Substack account, which is seymourhersh.substack.com, all about the Nord Stream pipeline explosion that happened in, I think it was September of last year, getting into a lot of detail on exactly how that went down involving the CIA, the military.
Is there a train of thought that suggests that the pipeline incident was the precursor to the current financial situation?
No, I wouldn't say that, but it's definitely not helping the people of Germany, that's
yeah,
for sure.
It definitely exacerbates the situation. So the way that this has contributed to the current financial situation is this was an effective way of getting energy into Europe
right.
from Russia.
Right.
So now there is no effective way of getting energy from Russia into Europe. And this is, of course, like, so this is the physical side that is paralleled
by the... Which means costs go up.
Right. And this is, of course, paralleled by the sort of social political side where Russia says, well, we don't want your oil anyway.
Right.
Except, of course, they physically rely on it to not die.
So instead of having a faucet full of oil that they can tap into whenever they want to, now they have to move it via...
Truck it in and ship it.
Truck, train, plane, whatever it is, right? The old school methods?
Right.
Okay.
So all of these are contributing to higher costs of energy. And those higher costs are putting strain on the entire economic
right.
system.
So instead of, you know, even without the explosion of the Nord Stream, the government still hadn't approved it. It
right.
still hadn't been turned on
right.
because of the sanctions they were holding off on doing that. But now they can't turn it on at all, even if they wanted to. So what we found out was happening was Russia was selling its liquefied natural gas to Asia, to China, who were then selling
Jacking
it to Europe. Yeah, so they just basically added a middleman. So then China would then have to load it onto tanker ships.
Yeah.
Then those would have to sail around over to Europe, God knows what extra cost
right.
to do that. And then the Europeans were paying to get that liquefied natural gas off of the tankers and then into their communities.
Wow.
So yeah, just a tremendous waste of resources.
And one of the things that this does is it cranks up the inflation cost.
Sure.
Because, I mean, money printing is the source of inflation, but there are a lot of products that increased in their price because they relied on oil, of course, to right. move products, to move the things that we needed to make the products.
And let's not forget government shutting down businesses and that kind of thing affected supply chain and moved inflation forward another degree.
Right. And giving all these people the money that they would have earned had they been allowed to go to work. So now the European Central Bank has had to follow the Federal Reserve in cranking up the interest rates.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So once you crank those interest rates, all of your banks are holding these things that are no longer nearly as valuable as they need them to be.
Yeah, the same exact thing is happening there. And in fact, we're going to get into the Deutsche Bank, I think is how you mm-hmm. pronounce it, coming up here in a little bit. Might be the latest disaster unfolding.
It's not the douche bank?
It is.
Kind of.
Yeah. So Seymour Hersh is back at it on his Substack blog with an update that he posted, I don't know, looks like about a week ago. Not even that, half a week. So earlier this week. He says, it's been 6 weeks since I published a report based on anonymous sourcing naming President Joe Biden as the official who ordered the mysterious destruction last September of Nord Stream 2, the new $11 billion pipeline that was scheduled to double the volume of natural gas delivered from Russia to Germany. The story gained traction in Germany and Western Europe, but was subject to a near media blackout in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Imagine
weird.
That.
Wait, you mean the United States is engaging in sort of blacking out of things that people want the public to hear and
the
see?
Lapdog media, the media that won't ask any tough questions?
I don't believe it.
Well, next you're going to be telling me that the FBI is putting pressure on social media so that we can't share these things directly.
2 weeks ago, after a visit by German Chancellor Olaf Scholz to Washington in the U.S., and German intelligence agencies attempted to add to the blackout by feeding the New York Times and the German weekly Die Zeit false cover stories to counter the report that Biden and U.S. operatives were responsible for the pipeline's destruction. Press aides for the White House and the CIA have consistently denied that America was responsible for exploding the pipelines, and those pro forma denials were more than enough for the White House press corps. There is no evidence that any reporter assigned there has yet to ask the White House press secretary whether Biden had done what any serious leader would do, formally task the American intelligence community to conduct a deep investigation with all of its assets and find out just who had done the deed in the Baltic Sea, which, of course, you know, that wouldn't really result in anything. But
that right there is absolutely the admission of guilt that you could possibly receive on this. Why are you not tasking your intelligence to find out who did this? Oh, because you know who did this.
Right. According to a source within the intelligence community, the president hasn't done so, nor will he, because he knows the answer. Sarah Miller, an energy expert and editor at Energy Intelligence, which publishes leading trade journals, explained to me in an interview why the pipeline story has been big news in Germany and Western Europe. Quote, the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines in September led to a further surge of natural gas prices, for the reasons we already explained, that were already six or more times pre-crisis levels. Nord Stream was blown up in late September. German gas imports peaked a month later, in October, at 10 times pre-crisis levels. Imagine your gas bill in your home going up 10x. Imagine your electricity bill going up 10x. That's what those people are having to deal with.
My electricity bill went up, it doubled.
Yeah.
So is that 2x?
Yep.
All right. So I can't
And that's
imagine.
A lot.
Can't imagine. It, yeah.
That's a shocker.
No,
right?
I mean, oh my God. Like, so much so mm-hmm. that I, because I have a bank account locally with a credit union in the New Hampshire area, they have taken to marketing to folks like me.
Yep.
Whatever that means, whatever my demographic fits. Like, hey, do you need a loan to help pay off your utility bills? We're pre-approving you for up to like $3,000. And I'm like, seems like a low amount considering like inflation and the cost mm-hmm. of living and all that kind of stuff. Seems like a very low amount for a credit union to be marketing to an individual as a utility assistance program, right? Like, so not only are you going to have to go, yeah, my utility's doubled, and boy, am I underwater because of it. But you're going to have to go, sure, let me borrow some money, and then pay you some interest on top of it, right? So that, like, I can get out from under this thing.
Yeah, my gas company is just extortion at this point. They literally will not tell me how much they're going to charge me to put it back on.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I've had to stop paying the gas bill.
Yeah, I've got, hopefully soon, some work starting on my house where one of the things to be included is an off-grid heating solution, something wood-burning.
Oh, nice.
You know, maybe a wood stove, pellet stove, something, but something that will work without electricity. I spent a portion of this winter, there was a couple of days where the power went out.
Mm-hmm. And like, you have electric heat.
And I have electric heat and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Now, it was only out for like one night, so 2 days and one night. But, man, that one night was freaking cold.
You bundle up that's about all you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I would have other options for my heating except for the government regulations that do not allow someone to enter competition with this company.
Mm. So electricity prices across Europe were piled up or pulled up, and governments spent as much as, again, adding to the banking crisis, 800 billion euros by some estimates, shielding, quote unquote, households and businesses from the impact. So they subsidized people by printing more money out in order to pay off the electric bills to, quote unquote, get through the winter. Well, of course, now it's coming due when the banking situation.
And of course, whenever they do that, it just makes whatever of that currency that you're holding onto in your safe or in your bank account or under your mattress
worth less
than it was before they printed it.
Gas prices reflecting the mild winter in Europe, so they kind of lucked out, that dodged a bit of a bullet with the temperatures this year, have now fallen back to roughly a quarter of the October peak, but they're still between 2 and 3 times pre-crisis levels and are more than 3 times the current U.S. rates. Over the last year, German and other European manufacturers closed their most energy-intensive operations, such as fertilizer and glass production, and it's unclear when, if ever, those plants will reopen. Europe is scrambling to get solar and wind capability in place, but it may not come soon enough to save large chunks of German industry. In early March, President Biden hosted German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Washington. The trip included only 2 public events, a brief pro forma exchange of compliments between the two before the White House press corps with no questions allowed, and a CNN interview with Scholz, who did not touch on the pipeline allegations.
Huh.
The chancellors had flown to Washington with no members of the German press on board, no formal dinner scheduled, and the two world leaders were not slated to conduct a press conference, as routinely happens at such high-profile meetings.
No formal dinner? Won't they get hungry?
We're going to continue here in moments. The latest from the Nord Stream pipeline. Putin is also weighing in on this, and apparently weighing in with some new weapons being brought into Belarus, as Peakless will be explaining coming up here on Free Talk Live. On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com. Free Talk Live. The phones are open. And you can join us. Live Saturday episode. The number for you is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. I do want to say thank you to Moon Moth, who is a Free Talk Live supporter of our
Moths on the
program.
Moon?
How you know, Captain? Moon Moth is a silver level supporter, meaning that Moon Moth is contributing $5 a month to our AMPS, which stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. It's a way for you to directly help Free Talk Live do what we do and bring the message of peace and liberty and freedom and cryptocurrencies and gold, silver alternatives to the status quo. to radio stations all across the country. We've got over 170 great stations that air the show at various different times throughout the week. We could have 300. I mean, it is possible, but it does take some time. It does take some marketing and some effort. So please join Moon Moth over at amps.freetalklive.com, and you can help us do that. That's amps.freetalklive.com. And that is our Patreon, by the way. You can use your debit card, your credit card, your PayPal to get signed up there. As long as the banking system is still operating, that system will continue. But once again, it's amps.freetalklive.com.
So in a moment of just sort of self-promotion, I've been telling folks that, yes, I am releasing a three-song, all-original, heavy metal EP. Right? That's just three songs. It's not an album, which would be like, I think you got to do like seven or eight songs minimum to do an album. So an EP, extended play, this is old-school terminology.
No one knows what that is anymore.
It'll be released on July 4th. So everything I'm doing up until now is sort of leading up to that. If you happen to attend Porkfest or Forkfest, right? Forkfest is like the week leading up to the Porcupine Freedom Festival, and then I'll also be at Porkfest. You could come and find me and get a copy of these three songs, and I'm hoping to maybe have some Captain Kickass t-shirts available with that. I'm hoping to do a pre-sale kind of a thing here in the next month or so, where folks can go to my revamped website, CaptainKickass.com, which it's been live for like a week now, but I'm only just saying it now on the radio because I'm satisfied that it's finally like
you think it's coming
acceptable.
Yeah.
There was some weird thing going on with the preview, so if you posted the website in any social media, the preview would come up as like just a bunch of like stuff that I didn't write and images that I'd never included. I think I've got that all fixed. So CaptainKickass.com, you can go find out about, I've got t-shirts there now for Captain Kickass and Beard Talk Live.
Yeah, that's right.
Available, plus like links to all the stuff I've ever done, all my previous heavy metal bands, my parody work with the Kickass Parody Project, etc. and so on. So
CaptainKickass.com?
Thanks.
Okay, great. So we were talking about the latest from Seymour Hersh on his Substack account at SeymourHersh.substack.com. This is the investigative reporter who's been active for decades, just uncovering some of the most important stories in our history. And this, of course, is another one, the Nord Stream pipeline explosion, where Hersh revealed through his contacts in the U.S. government and that it was the CIA, that it was the U.S. military, that it was Joe Biden that orchestrated this explosion that has kept the German people a lot colder this wintertime.
I have a question. The Nord Stream pipeline.
Yeah.
Where does it like begin and end?
Russia is where it begins, and it ends in Germany.
So that's it.
Yeah, and it goes in the
destinations,
Baltic Sea,
like along the way. That there's
no,
other,
not to my knowledge.
You know,
no,
wise
straight
or
shot.
Taps. Okay,
no,
so right,
shot.
Just between those two countries.
Yeah, if it was going to go anywhere else, it would have to get shipped out of Germany, which is a realistic possibility if there was peace in Eurasia.
Okay.
So the last bit here, he's got is talking about how Biden and this German Chancellor Olaf Scholz had a meeting earlier this month. There were only two public events, none of which included any kind of question and answer by the press corps, which he says hasn't bothered to ask the White House press people any questions of substance about the Nord Stream explosion and the true, you know, story about what went on there.
And I gotta ask, why are none of the, like, I get it, you're all mouthpieces for the government, but you'd think just to keep up appearances, someone would ask, oh, hey, you're investigating this, right? Because you didn't do it, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I guess not. Instead, it was later reported that Biden and Scholz had an 80-minute long meeting with no aides present for much of the time.
Meanwhile, Scholz is there going, I see nothing! I know nothing!
There have been no statements or written understandings made public since then by either government, but I was told, says Hersh, by someone with access to diplomatic intelligence that there was a discussion of the pipeline exposé, and as a result, certain elements in the CIA were asked to prepare a cover story in collaboration with German intelligence that would provide the American and German press with an alternative version for the destruction of Nord Stream 2. And maybe some of you saw that in the news. I didn't actually look at all the details on it, but there's been something floating around that it was just six randos on a boat or something like that.
It was aliens, man. Aliens.
Six randos on a boat.
I didn't read the story.
Well,
but
I mean, the original explanation for this was that Russia had done it to
that's
themselves.
What they wanted them to kill. Yeah.
I am the pipeline now.
In the words of the intelligence community, the agency was to pulse the system in an effort to discount the claim that Biden had ordered the pipeline's destruction. Then RT reports on this, you know, again, the apparently some media is talking to Seymour Hersh, and he spoke with a Chinese company, China Daily Newspaper. I don't know if that's the Chinese state daily newspaper or who that is, but regardless, RT reports that U.S. President Joe Biden ordered the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines because he was unhappy with the level of support provided by German Chancellor Olaf Scholz to Ukraine in its conflict with Russia. And that's according to Seymour Hersh, who first accused Washington of destroying the key European energy route in an article released February and made more allegations in his discussion with the China Daily newspaper published this week. Quote, the U.S. president was afraid of Chancellor Scholz not wanting to put more guns and more arms forward for Kyiv. That's all. I don't know whether it was anger or punishment, but the net effect is that it cut off a major power source through Western Europe, said
Hersh.
And
just to clarify, China Daily is the Chinese Communist Party-owned daily English-language newspaper.
Got it. Okay, Thank you for that.
I have a series of questions, but the first one, of course, is how do statesmen, specifically leaders of countries, we can direct it towards the United States if we'd like, how do they learn to be diplomatic? So I ask this because I have never seen like a copy of a president visiting a foreign leader and the whole actual talk that they've had about whatever the issue du jour is before they arrive at said conclusion. Mm-hmm. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff back when Trump was in office about Trump visiting Kim
North
Jong,
Korea.
You know, and that kind of a thing. And they came to some sort of an agreement, but you never see like the talk itself.
Oh, they are
even with the translators,
room.
Right?
Yeah.
So now if I'm a guy trying to learn to do a new job, right? Oh my gosh, somebody elected Captain Kickass as president, right? And I gotta like I'm OJT on the job training, right? How do I learn to be diplomatic? I'm probably going to go do some film study, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go review previous statesmen using their powers of diplomacy and verbal, you know, ways to, like, you know, get their way and come to agreements with other countries and that kind of stuff. Now, if that stuff isn't available, how the hell is anybody supposed to learn how to be diplomatic?
Good question.
Well, if... since you ask, my best attempt would be to research like negotiators, you know, like hostage system negotiators. Seems like
I'm with
the
you.
Kind of
what
study
I'm really getting
because
at,
this isn't available.
What I'm really getting at is why doesn't government make these talks available for public consumption?
Well, they have something to hide.
That's pretty clear.
Because these are backroom deals, and we are not allowed to know what our rulers have promised of us.
Land of the free, huh?
Yeah.
A little bit more here from RT's summary of the Hersh discussion with the China Daily. They say the initial purpose of mining Nord Stream 1 and 2, built to deliver the Russian gas to Europe through Germany, was, quote, to give the president an option to say to Putin, if you go to war in Ukraine, we're going to destroy the pipelines, which, of course, he said in February before the Russians went to war.
Oddly, it happened.
Biden himself publicly confirmed that stance, but, quote, unfortunately, those people in the Western press seem to have forgotten, said Hersh. Just under 3 weeks before the launch of Moscow's military operation, Biden warned during a press conference on February 7th, and we played the audio on the show.
Yep.
Quote, if Russia invades, there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it. I mean, that's enough of a smoking gun right there.
Well, you see, this is your basic detective work. Mm-hmm. See, now, if someone blows up your car, and I know for a fact that this person had the means, had the motive, had the opportunity, and specifically expressed a desire
they
to
were
blow
do
up
it.
Your car, yeah. Then clearly what actually happened was you blew up your own car.
Right. Finally, according to Hersh, the U.S. leader decided to order the detonation of mines at the bottom of the Baltic Sea in September because the conflict, quote, wasn't going great in Ukraine, unquote, from a U.S. perspective. There was, at best, a stalemate during that period in what Hersh described as the American war that President Biden was so eager to support.
Who blew up the underground mines?
supposedly? The United States.
Okay.
They set the mines in tandem, apparently, with the Norwegian government, mm-hmm. I believe.
Wouldn't that be like a defensive measure normally? Like, let's say you're building this Nord Stream pipeline. You don't want any potential sabotage to happen, right? Saboteur, you don't want any, you know. And so within X amount of radius of said pipeline, you plant some mines, right, for example, right? Because you don't want anybody sort of getting near it, and you want them to blow up before they blow up the pipeline, mm-hmm. right? That seems to me like a defensive measure. So for them to go in and plant new mines to blow up the pipeline seems weird.
Well, weren't defensive mines placed around
the
pipeline.
So there was no, like,
no.
field of tripwires or whatever surrounding the pipeline.
I'm pretty sure that's still against international law.
Yeah.
And they like to not get caught doing that. So
that doesn't necessarily mean they won't do anything like
that. Well, yeah, no, I mean, blowing up the pipeline was also against international law, but, you know, they haven't officially been caught doing that, whereas, you know, leaving a bunch of boat-sinking bombs, a little easier to go, hey, wait a second, this has got a serial number on it.
Yeah, in theory.
I'm clear now.
In the Baltic Sea, there should be the ability for just the average person to just putter around with their boat or whatever, right?
You would think so.
Go fishing and stuff like
that. Scuba diving, snorkeling.
You don't want to fish up a mine. That might ruin your day. And
And I remember when Biden was pulling everyone out of Afghanistan, and we were all sitting around wondering, okay, so what's the next war that we're preparing for here?
Right.
Oh, that was
well.
Here it is.
And here's the thing. Yeah. He keeps seeing that. Hey. These people want to, like, get peace again. They're, like, trying to negotiate peace with each other. Stop that. And they just wouldn't stop trying to, like, every now and again a little bit, talking about maybe possibly having some peace. So he took away the highest incentive that Germany had to not have a forever war on their doorstep.
If you want to comment, you can join the show here. The number is 603-283-6160. Let's talk to Bad Slave in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Bad Slave.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm remembering back to the DNC days during, you know, the Mueller investigation of Hillary.
The DMC days.
DNC?
Democratic National Committee.
Oh, DNC. Okay, got it.
And Seth Goldman, who ended up dead, what's her name? And Wiener, her husband, they were part mm-hmm. of the game back then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who those people are.
And he had
Oscar Mayer.
And he had
Anthony Weiner.
Weiner.
Like mind-bendingly corrupt, and of course got caught in like the most absurd scandal
and appropriately named.
Yeah. And the corruption on Anthony Weiner goes much, much deeper than you might expect, especially if you look into his wife and who her best friend is, and that's how you get Epstein'd.
Can we be frank about Anthony Weiner?
Well, so anyways, I thought that in the emails that showed up off of Anthony's computer that I think were sourced from Hillary, because that all got mixed together at some point in time, and I think it was WikiLeaks that actually received that. Information. There was a guy, kind of a snoopy guy that a PI, I suppose, that was involved. He had a nice big video of his involvement in collecting that data. But anyways, it had nothing to do with Russia. and not only that, I think amongst the emails from Hillary was this communication between Cy Hirsch and Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
That kind of a mentor, mentee arrangement. I I don't know. It seemed like he was pretty involved in something that didn't look
so
good.
Are you talking about like the private investigator that starts looking into the Seth's mysterious death and then experienced a mysterious death of his own?
No. He actually was contacted by Seth before he was killed and gave this guy the data, and I think it ended up in the WikiLeaks stream. And
I'm a little lost. Who was contacted by who, Seth?
Yeah, I'm a little lost too.
No, the guy, I can't remember his name. He had a really nice video of he ended up in Russia as well. This guy, family and everything. I mean, he was definitely put at risk.
It honestly would not surprise me in the least to find a whole lot of sort of breadcrumb trails that went to Russia leading from Hillary Clinton, because it is kind of a standard tactic to accuse your opposition of what you in fact are doing. And it has definitely been their go-to move to say, "You're in bed with Russia," every time someone does something they don't like.
Thank you for the call tonight, Bad Slave. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Speaking of Russia, Peekless, you had a story tonight about some potential expansion of nuclear arms from Russia to neighboring Belarus.
Yep. Yeah, and for those who aren't aware, Belarus is essentially Russia in everything but name. I mean, they are just a puppet state. Yeah, they're basically the same place for all intents and purposes.
Before I moved to Keene, New Hampshire, I was working in an office environment in a, we'll call it IT, sort of a thing, managed services provider. So that's like telephones, internet, backbone, VPN, SD-WAN, all this kind of stuff. One of the dudes that was hired was this kid from Belarus, whiz kid, right? Super techie, right? Was dialed in and this kind of thing. And he would constantly have conversations with me, because all the conversations he would have with other people in the United States were all like, "Oh, well, welcome. And oh, you're in the best place." And it was all this like foo-foo, blow some flowers up your butt kind of, statist speak.
A lot of hot smoke.
And so he would have these conversations with me at like lunchtime and be like, he's like, "I like you because you don't talk like others." Right. And I would talk about, the evils of the state and how the state is your master. And he's like, "I understand all of that." All of that being said, I came here because it's still better than what I experienced growing up over there. He's like, you're absolutely correct. Factually speaking, these are the things that are happening. Nobody else in the United States notices that right now, as far as like the majority of people. He's like, so that gives me an advantage as a guy who's grown up, seeing this weird like statism, this oppression, this sort of varying degrees of statism depending on the time in his life and the effect that his parents had on the situation and that kind of a thing. So, but he was very happy to be in the United States, but he was very unhappy to see sort of the sheepish mentality that the average United States person had.
Yeah, that was a very common comment of people who, after it fell, people from the USSR that came over here who were like, "Wow, in our country, they would tear out fingernails to try and get the kind of compliance and the like singular worldview that you have just automatically here, with no threats, like no direct obvious threats of torture." And it was just a matter of having the broadcast media say the exact same thing through every outlet gave everyone the same worldview, whereas there they had to work very, very hard to make people deny their own, experience of reality.
I had sort of a similar thing occur when I was in Seattle doing some recording in a recording studio and whatever this past weekend. And I had a Uber driver from Belarus, and he was just, I don't know, like somebody put something in his Wheaties that day, or I just looked like the right kind of guy. He just went off on like how the citizens who are born in the United States of America have no clue like how good they have it, and they do nothing to secure those, you know, the rights of the people and, you know, all this kind of stuff. He was just going on, and I was like, brother, you're preaching to the choir here, man. Mm-hmm. Like, everything you're saying is, like, stuff that I've been, you know, and I gave him, like, a business card. He's like, I'm going to look you up. I told him we do this show. And
yeah, cool.
So hopefully we got a listener out of the deal.
But there's so many people that have come from tyrannical communist and socialist regimes have moved to the United States expecting it's going to be a freer place. And it is.
It is,
but
to an
extent.
But
then they can see the ground being laid for exactly what happened, mm-hmm. where they came from.
Right.
They see all the steps being taken. And it's just like they're seeing it all over again, and it's like deja vu.
Who's the new hand? Is it Lily Tang?
Lily Tang Williams. Yeah. She came from China, and she's seeing it happening here, too.
Yeah, there's very much the groundwork being laid for an intensification of state worship.
Mm-hmm.
And in the USSR, there was no bones about it. This was state worship. This is the plan. This is our glorious revolution. This is the utopia that we are willing to sacrifice anything for. And then, okay, well, now everything is perfect because we have our Soviet Socialist Republic. And how dare you think otherwise? And in the same way, you have a lot of the ground being laid where there's no such thing as biological gender. That's just not real. Nope. Men can give birth. That's totally a thing. And it's that same kind of denying your own knowledge and experience of reality in order to so wholeheartedly embrace an ideology that is being mostly held up by the state.
So, what's going on in Belarus?
Putin says Russia will station tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. Mm-hmm. Coming from NPR.org.
What's the difference between a tactical nuclear weapon and a nuclear weapon?
Size.
Okay, yeah.
The size of the explosion.
So, which one's bigger?
Tactical nukes smaller, are smaller.
Right? Oh, okay, all right. So, they're the more like covert suitcase nuke type.
Yeah, it only blows up a small town instead of an entire city.
Because it seems to me the difference is just deployment, right? I have a nuke, and I'm not really doing anything with it. I have no use for it. It's just sitting in a warehouse. Or I have a nuke, and I'm going to put it near the border of my enemy country. That, to me, seems like a tactical nuke. Because you have a tactic involved in placement of the nuke.
A tactical nuclear weapon, according to Wikipedia, is designed to be used on a battlefield in military situations, mostly with friendly forces in proximity and perhaps even on contested friendly territory, generally smaller in explosive power. They are defined in contrast to strategic nuclear weapons, which are designed mostly to be targeted at the enemy interior, far away from the war front, against military bases, cities, towns.
Very well, thank you.
Doesn't seem like a very friendly thing to do to me.
No, definitely not. So these would include gravity bombs, short-range missiles, artillery shells, landmines, depth charges, and torpedoes equipped with nuclear warheads.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. So, fantastic.
Tactical nukes.
Tactical nukes. And, you know, for those of us keeping track at home, that does mean that these nukes are this much closer to the U.S.
I presume the reasoning for this is because NATO is moving ever closer to Russia.
We'll get into that in just a moment, but I will give this spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. It's in response to nuclear weapons on the opposite side.
Oh, okay. I'm shocked to learn that. We're coming up here in moments. The number is 603-283-6160. We'll get into it, and you can share your thoughts as well. Hour number two is on the way. You can join us. You can also bring up whatever you want. Plus, we'll get into the banking crisis, the latest on that in Europe. It's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live.
You can bring up what you want. We kick off the second hour. And the number is 603-283-6160. Talk about nukes. Tactical nuclear weapons, as we just learned, are not the nukes that are launched from afar away into, you know, some other country way, way away.
Those are strategic nuclear weapons.
Right. These are the ones for the battlefield, for military situations. And apparently, according to the story Peakless Mountaineer is telling us, that Putin is allegedly going to be moving some of these into Belarus. So they're not there yet.
Yep. This is the announcement that they are preparing to move them into Belarus.
What else do we need to know?
Well, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced plans on Saturday, that is today, to station tactical nuclear weapons in neighboring Belarus. Putin said the plan was in response to Britain's decision this past week to provide Ukraine with armor-piercing rounds containing depleted uranium.
Now, I remember depleted uranium from the Iraq conflict, if I recall correctly, 20 years ago, and it became a subject of some controversy because the depleted uranium, once the rounds are shot, the depleted uranium sticks around.
It
right?
does, and it just continues to slowly poison the area.
Including the people of, in this case, Ukraine.
Yes. And, you know, just for a short period of, say, the next 12 millennia or so. You know, just you know, a few civilizations and it'll stop irradiating.
Doesn't this seem counter to the whole claim that the Western powers are saying they're there to help Ukraine if they're going to be using depleted uranium on the battlefield there?
It sure does seem counter to the claim that they are helping the Ukrainian people. They are helping the Ukrainian people into an early grave.
To poisoning them, basically.
Yes. Yes. This is absolutely a maniacal toddler saying, if I can't have it, no one can have it, and trying to tear the toy in half.
I don't necessarily think that dropping tactical nukes in the area is going to help the Ukrainian people either, so I don't see Putin as
it
really
certainly
being
is not.
Of
and
help here either.
And, you know, I really hope this is just saber-rattling and, you know, trying to put on a fierce face and, like, not let you get away with crossing the nuclear boundary here without some comeuppance. Because so far, his general tactics have not been the, like, salt the earth, slash and burn, you know, victory at all costs kind of war. This has been basically trying to, you know, trying to win, but to maintain as much as possible the possibility of having good relations with the rest of Europe when this is all over with. Which, I gotta tell you, irradiating part of the continent is not a great way to keep good relations.
Yeah, I'd heard about the depleted uranium stuff, so that's what Putin is saying is his reason for doing this. Because I know he had said previously that if the Ukrainian, which is, of course, the puppet for the U.S. and, you know, these other Western countries, that if their missiles could reach into Russia, that then Putin would have to continue the invasion into Ukraine to push further west into Ukraine to make sure that these missiles would not be able to reach Russia. And so I would just my initial thought was this had something to do with the continuing push into Ukraine. But
yeah,
maybe not.
And the thing is, I honestly can't put this past Putin because Ukraine is the entry to Russia. If you are trying to march an army into Russia, this is basically the only effective way that you can do it is through Ukraine. So I can't put it completely past him to say, you know what? I'm going to just make this whole radio, this whole area radioactive.
Is there an actual? Sorry, I was. Is there a statement from him that you can? Where's the story from? Is it RT or elsewhere?
This one's Associated Press.
Okay.
Now, to be fair, I think that this part, this next bit is just propaganda. Russia falsely claimed these rounds have nuclear components. Now, okay, I get that there is some question as to whether this counts as nuclear, because depleted uranium is not capable of a nuclear explosion. That is definitely true. But to say that it does not contain nuclear components when it contains uranium...
Right.
is not really truthful either. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko has long asked for the weapons, Putin said, speaking in an interview on Russian state television. So, yeah, the Belarusian president has been like, come on, move these nukes in. And Putin has been like, you know, I just don't want to provoke Europe and NATO into going any further than I have to provoke them. But now he's like, oh, well, if you're going to cross this boundary, I can cross it too.
Does the existence of depleted uranium imply the existence of pleated uranium?
Yes. Like it is replete in radioactivity.
Like I have unpleated dress pants, like, you know, the one suit that I own or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I also have pleated dress pants, and is that the same difference? Is it just
are you
less
asking
folding?
If the depleted uranium needs to be ironed?
Or does it have less folds?
Is it pre-folded?
Do I still need to wear a belt or suspenders?
I wouldn't suggest wearing it.
Okay.
Not a very good choice, unless you know, really, really want to just see what happens to your genetic code.
So my anarcho-capitalist idea of creating a competitive alternative to the Under Armour brand, which would be the Under Uranium brand, is probably a bad idea?
Probably a bad idea.
Okay, all right.
Assuming you
scratch
don't...
Scratch that off the list.
Yeah.
We'll continue with this here in a moment. I want to go to the phones here. Caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's your name? Hello? You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Hello. What is your name, caller? Hello. You're
Hello?
On the air.
Yep.
Are you hearing
we
us?
Hear you, man.
Oh, hi.
Can
yes.
you give us your
hi,
name
I...
and go ahead and get your point?
Sure. My name is Tanya,
right.
And I'm calling because I wanted to answer your question about where diplomats go to get training.
Oh, okay, great.
And they go to the Foreign Service Institute, which is also called the Schultz Center, and it's in Arlington, Virginia.
It's called the Schultz Center.
And is that run by the government?
Yes, it is. It's part of the Department of State.
Okay. Now you know, Captain.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing is half the battle.
Yeah.
You know what the other half is?
Dying?
The battle.
Oh, okay.
First you have to know, then you actually have to do the battle.
Yeah, okay, I gotcha.
Could we not?
Tanya, how do you know this? Have you attended said diplomatic training?
Actually, I have. I'm a Foreign Service officer.
Can you tell us, like, when they're training people on how to use diplomacy to solve problems, you know, can you give us like a point or two that you were taught, or, you know, something in the curriculum you learned that you found was valuable?
I didn't go specifically for diplomacy. I'm a technical officer,
okay.
So I went for language training several times. But my colleagues who are in State Department, a lot of it is listening and trying to, see the other person's point of view. And I don't know if that actually goes on in back rooms on a higher level, but, you know, that's pretty much the basics of diplomacy, is actually trying to build consensus. And so to do that, you actually have to have a little empathy, and you actually have to see from another person's point of view.
So what you're saying is the skill sets that, well, the three of us here in the radio studio have tonight, the ability to listen, the ability to interpret,
mm-hmm.
and the ability to ask questions, are all the same skill set that diplomacy people would, or diplomats
and
would
empathize, which of
right.
course would mean that politicians should never be involved in these processes because they are total psychopaths and have no empathy.
I think people actually have those skills, like, intrinsically. You know, you just have those innate skills.
Most people do, but psychopaths are the exception, right? Psychopaths, by definition, are people who do not feel what other people feel. They cannot place themselves in the shoes of another. They cannot have
lack
empathy. Yes.
Well, and I think to a large extent, empathy is like a language. Now, if you are immersed in an empathetic scenario, if you are surrounded by empathetic people, if your parents show you what empathy looks like, then just like any language, you will naturally pick this up and you will speak it as a native speaker does. If, on the other hand, you do not see empathy, you do not experience empathy, you never get a chance to develop it.
That's a great point. Tanya, anything else you want to share about it tonight?
No, I'm overseas and in a difficult country, and I'm just praying that
are you deployed or are you overseas, you know, of your own volition?
No, I'm working.
Okay.
Yeah. So just say a prayer for the people of Haiti. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
All right.
Good luck down there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks,
I appreciate it. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. So, Pickles, you were sharing from
And just AP. one last thing I wanted to mention on the matter of the unfortunate situation where we're relying on psychopaths to be empathetic. I will say this. They do, on the other hand, have extraordinary focus on creating consensus. Consensus is exactly how they wield their powers over all of us. Mm-hmm. They get consensus among the ruled to continue to be ruled and to have faith in this system.
Consensus, and I just want to make sure for our listeners, different than consent.
Correct.
And they do that by lying.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Which, as far as I can tell, is the cornerstone of diplomacy.
And trying to pretend like they're actual humans that have feelings and they can somehow relate to you, like when they, you know, when you see Joe Biden go into an ice cream shop with his grandkids or whatever, they always have these sort of humanization events where they're trying to look, you know, like an alien trying to fit in with people.
Anybody who takes sales training 101 will be taught the following. It's called
mirroring.
Feel, felt, found.
Mm, that right? too. Yeah.
I know how you feel, Ian, and many people have felt the same way. Mm-hmm. But what they found is, and then insert
that this product
solution.
Works.
Right, yeah.
yeah.
That my plan to fix this problem will be the exact plan that is right. And that's how people are sold. They go, oh, he feels that way. Many have felt the same way. But what they found was this. How can I argue with that? And like, that is a sales technique that everybody, all of our listeners, mm-hmm. even people who have never heard of the show, should know about because it's used on you on a daily basis.
Yeah, and the kind of humanization training, so when you get trained to do these things that other people do by rote, they do empathy just like they speak English if they are raised in an English-speaking area. Whereas if you do not have the power of empathy, you can mimic some of the effects, but it is very much along the lines of seeing someone as a robot that you are attempting to discern their outputs and press the correct buttons for the outputs that you are looking for. And to the point of building consent through deception, there is a very, very fine line between a diplomat and a spy.
Hmm. Indeed. All right.
What's the difference?
Very little.
I was going to say, because their job descriptions seem to overlap.
There is a huge amount of overlap between the two. And that's why one of the first things that happens when diplomatic relations break down is that all of the diplomats are kicked out because they don't want any spies there.
Okay. All right. So what else?
Speaking of broken diplomatic relationships.
So what else does the AP have in their propaganda, their pro-West propaganda here about? Yeah,
well, it's a very short article continuing to speak on the Belarusian president. He said that construction of storage facilities for the weapons in Belarus would be completed by July 1st.
Okay.
Russia used the territory of Belarus as a staging ground to send troops into Ukraine, and Moscow and Minsk have maintained close military ties. So not a huge amount of information on this subject, but no, I remember hearing just a little whiff of the idea of, oh, they're thinking about sending depleted uranium rounds into this fight because they are very effective at piercing tanks. And mm-hmm. I just thought, oh my God, don't send nuclear anything. Don't put uranium in Ukraine. It is a bad choice for, you know, the prospect of human survival on Earth.
I should save this for Beard Talk Live, but it just popped in my head. Ukrainium.
Ukrainium.
So I was just kind of looking around here at depleted uranium because I remember hearing about it in, you know, 20 years ago, whenever it was, as people were learning about it being used in Iraq. And
it's sort of the spent uranium from like a nuclear facility, a nuclear power facility. Right?
Yeah, it's not active or whatever. It is depleted. And so the claim, at least from the government sites, is that, look, this stuff isn't a problem. As long as you don't get a shrapnel of it embedded in your body.
Which is very likely to happen to, soldiers, for example.
Sure, but they're soldiers. I mean, the children of Ukraine probably not as likely to have shrapnel from these rounds if they're being shot at tanks. So, I mean, is this really that big
of a deal?
I
realize you're playing devil's advocate, but look at all of the innocents who have been, bombed and shot at and whatever as a result
I mean, that's just a bombing problem. That's not a problem with depleted uranium, though, right?
Depleted uranium.
What's
in the
real risk here? I mean, if it's not in your body, is this really going to harm somebody?
Yes. Why? Absolutely. Okay. So let's start at the very, very bottom quantity of the problems of depleted uranium. So now, if you had uranium that was 100% depleted, no longer radioactive, you have lead.
Okay.
And lead is extremely toxic. It makes you stupid, then crazy, then dead. It gets into your water, it gets into your food. Mm. And that is the least poisonous version of what this thing can be.
Okay, good
but
point.
The very fact that it is depleted uranium and not lead means that it has this concentration of these subatomic particles that are flying off in all directions.
It still has radioactivity.
Right. It is still radioactive. It is still extremely toxic on a level that human beings are not fully capable of dealing with in any possible way. And it's the kind of radiation that does not go away for thousands of years. Mm. Now, that gets in the water, that gets in the food, that contaminates the entire area, and it is almost impossible
to
ever remove.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because when a shell explodes, it would be spreading whatever is in there all over the damn place, right?
Right.
Taken to the winds and in the soil, etc.
Yeah. That's exactly right. The only thing that it doesn't do is it doesn't have the capacity to make a nuclear explosion.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot go. It cannot hit the critical mass of creating a fission
or
fusion reaction. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Mm. But everything that you would want to avoid from high radiation from radioactive material, it still has all of those properties.
According to Wikipedia, they say, of course, that the military denies any kind of long-term risk, blah, 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 from depleted uranium, but they are indeed a topic of intense and ongoing controversy as far as the effects on civilian populations. As early as 97, British Army doctors warned the Ministry of Defense that exposure to depleted uranium increased the risk of developing lung, lymph, and brain cancer and recommended a series of safety precautions. According to the report, issued summarizing the advice of the doctors, quote, inhalation of insoluble uranium dioxide dust will lead to accumulation in the lungs with a very slow clearance, if any. Although chemical toxicity is low, there may be localized radiation damage of the lung leading to cancer. The report warns that, quote, all personnel should be aware that uranium dust inhalation carries a long-term risk. It has been shown to increase the risks of developing various cancers like lung, lymph, and brain cancers.
Right. So I remember during the Fukushima events, mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember the name of the website, but there was a guy doing daily YouTube updates who is a former director of the United States National Nuclear Program, whatever, giving you basically the science, right? He's like, look, I'm not putting any opinion into this stuff, but here's the facts as they are. He regurgitated what Ian just said and, further break down to layman's terms. If you get just one radioactive particle inside of your body,
mm-hmm.
that is a death sentence.
It is.
That particle will remain mm-hmm. inside of your body, continue to radiate until you die.
That's correct.
Now, there are different levels of radioactive particles. There are different, we'll call them potencies. Some, perhaps an irradiated one or one that's been exposed to water or whatever, not quite as toxic as one that's, say, fresh out of the nuclear disaster, right? So one might kill you slower than the other, but they're still going to kill you,
mm-hmm.
no matter what flavor, what type, what potency. And I found it very interesting that at the time of the Fukushima disaster, that what the United States government, and I'm pretty sure all of the other at least westernized governments around the planet did, was they went, well, currently we say that this amount of radioactive particles in the air and the water that you breathe and drink is fine. We're just going to double that. And so now this is the new safe level.
Right.
Which, of course, the old safe level was exceeded the moment Fukushima happened.
Mm-hmm.
And all it did was spread across the Pacific Ocean and into the West Coast and come across the country. And it's since made its way around the world multiple times, depositing these particles into your daily life.
And continues to do so.
Right. And that will never stop, near as I can tell.
Well, it could. Like, okay, so these materials had to be dug out of the ground. They were relatively safe when they were encapsulated inside the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, yes, a certain amount of radiation does still get through, but it's one of those, for every certain amount of Earth, you get an inverse square rule. Kind of like how heat gets an inverse square by distance. Like, if you're too close to the fire, you get burned. If you get further, then you don't get burned. Same thing happens. So that's heat radiation. Mm-hmm. So this is ionizing radiation. It's a similar principle when going through Earth, where when you have a higher and higher amount of Earth between you and the radioactive material, then less and less of it gets out. So if they would just cover this stuff up, I mean, if they would cover up the material the way they tend to cover up these stories, we'd be a lot safer. It's not that difficult. You just need to put stuff on top of it. But no one really wants to do that.
They want to blow up tanks with it, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, why would they decrease the amount of biological attack that they are making on the population? You guys keep getting too numerous and too knowledgeable. And they cannot stand that.
Canadian Uranium Medical Research Center obtained urine samples from a bombed civilian areas in Jalalabad in Afghanistan that showed concentrations of 80 to 400 nanograms per liter of undepleted uranium, far higher than the typical concentration in the British population, which is 5 nanograms per liter. So, yeah, it's definitely making it into these people's bloodstreams and bodies. More coming up. Free Talk Live. Enjoying the show here.
What?
Live Saturday edition.
Huh?
And it's Ian here with you.
Beakless Mountaineer.
And the authentic Lord Reverend Dr. Captain Kickass Buckshot Esquire, if you will.
Authentic now. Is that a new one?
Yeah, we added that.
Yeah.
We, 2, 3. Yeah, we. It was, I can't remember. I think I was telling the tale of like how Facebook tried to shut me down because, you know, L Captain Kickass isn't an authentic name.
Are you the genuine, bona fide,
and
authentic
so,
Captain Kickass?
Like all of the stuff that Facebook would send you was like, you know, we need you to submit 3 different types of ID to prove that your name is your authentic name. It never said government. It just said authentic. And so that was the key word. And so I think I was regaling folks on the show about that. And so somehow, I think between myself and Richie Rich, we decided to add the word authentic because I went through great trouble to keep my Facebook account open because they were trying to close not only mine, but like a bunch of like these drag people who do this for a profession.
Yeah.
Right. They go by some weird stage name. And so they put up a Facebook page that isn't their government name, their slave name. They also tried shutting down a Sioux Indian Facebook account. So the Sioux Indians, their translated names are something like, you know, Brett Two Bulls,
right.
You know, and the algorithm that Facebook program was like, nope, not real. And so I went to great lengths to fight with Facebook on many different levels. And finally they turned my account back on because they were just tired of me annoying them.
So you still have El Captain Kickass?
I still have it.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Yeah. And it's one of the reasons why I haven't left is because I'm like, you know, I put some time and effort into this thing, and while it still kind of sucks, there's a bunch of people that are like OG followers of mine from back in the metal band days and just relationships I've cultivated over time that, you know, it's nice to see once in a while. Oh, look
and
what Bob's up to. You
they
know?
Deserve to have updated parodies.
It's effective for all that kind of stuff. So at any rate, yes, I've added the word authentic. It is at the – if you go to CaptainKickass.com and you scroll all the way to the bottom, you'll see that whole thing. Just right at the bottom.
So we were talking about depleted uranium being used, apparently soon to be used maybe in Ukraine, because the UK government is sending
DU shells in with their, according to RT, Challenger 2 battle tanks that the UK is going to be sending into Ukraine. Putin has, or Moscow, blasted the move as a sign of, quote, absolute recklessness, irresponsibility, and impunity. The U.S. dismissed Russia's concerns by calling depleted uranium shells a, quote, commonplace type of munition that has been in use for decades.
We always poison the earth on which we fight for thousands of years. It's totally normal. We've done this for tens of years, whole tens of them.
Yeah, I wonder what's going to happen in Ukraine after, you know, the U.S. and the West has, you know, continued to destroy the people there
at this
with
rate,
this war.
At this rate, it is a literal post-apocalyptic wasteland that they are created.
Yeah, I mean, what's...
So,
what?
Like, okay, so here's one... Let me walk you through what happens when you start firing these things. Okay, so what they love about them is that they are so dense and so hard that they just pierce straight through this armor. Mm-hmm. You know, even this armor that's designed to explode outward to try and get those shells away from... Nah, just goes right through it. You know, still triggers the explosion. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so a certain amount of this stuff vaporizes. A certain amount of this stuff becomes dust particles that are light enough to go into the air. And guess what? The wind carries that directly into Russia.
Mm.
So I can see why they might be a little bit upset about it. No, not to Kiev. Mm-hmm. So, like, the wind predominantly goes from west to east in the northern hemisphere.
Is that right?
Yeah. So this wind is going to carry whatever amount of this gets particularized mm-hmm. to the point that it can go into the air. And then it's going to literally rain down radioactive death in small amounts on Russia.
Let's go to your phone calls and thoughts here. We got Jimmy on the line in Florida. Jimmy, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hi, Captain Kirk here, Captain. What are you guys going to do? You're making yourself enemies of the United States. The United States is going to fire these same shells into your free state of New Hampshire one day.
First of all, let me stop you there, Captain Kirk, Jimmy, yeah. Whatever you are. The United States... government has made themselves enemies of the people, not the other way around.
Oh, so you're going to be okay there. General Jimmy says you cannot defend that land.
Did you completely miss what he said? We're not going to be okay. We've never been okay. The most powerful military force that humanity has ever created has been against us since before we were born. We're not okay. Oh. That's why we talk about this.
That's why we're here.
Jimmy believes, based on his previous phone calls, that you know secession is an impossibility. But if it does happen, he fully believes that the U.S. military will invade. And that's where you're coming from, right, Jimmy? You think the U.S. military is going to invade New Hampshire or Texas or whoever it is that secedes first and just start dropping bombs and shooting depleted uranium. That's what you're saying here?
That's correct, yes. Well,
they're psychopaths. So I mean, it's certainly possible that they could do something like that to their own countrymen, to their own supporters, by the way, because whenever independence happens, there are going to be people who are against it. Okay, so those people are like you. You would call them loyalists, for instance. And so if 70% of New Hampshire votes for independence, that leaves 30% of the people of New Hampshire who wanted to stay in the United States. And you believe that the U.S. government will come in and bomb those people too, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
We don't think that's going to happen, though. We think that that's the old way of secession. That's the 1800s mode of secession that today it would not fly. That would not be acceptable to the American populace by like 93 to 94%, according to recent polls, or a recent poll that was done in 2022 on that very question. But certainly that is the big fear that a lot of people have, is that this psychopath American government will turn its guns on its own people. And I understand why people believe that, because, well, they do turn their guns on their own people regularly by putting peaceful people in prison cells who've never harmed anyone else.
Like you, for instance.
Yeah, I'm one of them, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so here's what I don't think you understand about the nature of these maniacs. They do, in fact, operate by having a majority of people accept what they're doing. The cost of operating is too high if the majority of people, or even a very significant minority of people, not only don't help them do what they're doing, but even in the slightest way start to slow them down. It becomes too costly to collect the extortion that they are collecting from these people if they lose legitimacy. Now, the second that they start firing on their citizenry, they lose all of their legitimacy in the eyes of a tremendous number of people. It's a game-losing move for them to do that.
When you succeed, you are not the citizenry. Don't you understand that?
You understand how citizenship works. I mean, if you believe in citizenship, and I think the whole thing's a scam, but let's just accept the idea that, you know, somehow there is a duty of obligation in return for an obligation of protection, which is what a citizenship is, or a duty of allegiance in return for an obligation of protection.
That's the definition, yes.
Yeah, we know that doesn't exist because their own Supreme Court has ruled over and over again that they have no obligation to protect you, but let's just accept the idea that it does exist. They certainly like to pretend that it exists. When you leave the United States physically and you move, let's say you want to move to Japan or Mexico or something like that, you do not cease to be considered a U.S. citizen. You would have to renounce said citizenship in order to no longer be considered a U.S. citizen. So by definition, when a political move or maneuver of independence happens, where people vote for independence, that is not the same thing as removing citizenship. Those people in New Hampshire or Texas or California, wherever it happens first, are going to say, whatever, I haven't heard much out of Florida, but
I can hope for them too.
Yeah, wherever it happens, those people will say, okay, we're independent, we're no longer part of the United States as a state. We're now our own nation, but every single one of those people would still be a U.S. citizen up and until some of them have babies in the new non-U.S. states. So any babies had in Florida after that point would likely not be considered.
Or if the United States went ahead and said, okay, you are a country, and since you are now a country, you can, from a different country, renounce your citizenship if you want.
Yeah, you could. Otherwise, if you don't renounce your citizenship, the U.S. government will expect you to continue paying taxes to the IRS, no matter where it is in the world that you are, whether it's Japan, Mexico, or the nation of New Hampshire.
And mind you, the citizenship that you may or may not consider renouncing was forced upon you in violation of your consent.
Right. And why wouldn't they want to continue collecting taxes from those people rather than, just destroying them all, annihilating those people? I think they would much rather get the tax money from them. Don't you?
I don't. No, I don't.
Okay.
Honey,
well, that's okay. We're not asking you to join us because you should stay right there in Florida where you are.
Yes, and I will.
And we're not afraid, And that's the thing. The fear that you're trying to propagate here, Jimmy, is what the government certainly wants people to believe. They certainly want you to.
What's wrong with that governor of yours? That governor of yours sounds pretty good. I heard him interviewed.
Yeah, he's awful.
He's a piece of garbage.
We have very frequently and continue to speak out against Sununu. He's awful. He's terrible.
Do you talk to him directly?
No, why would we talk to him?
Well, I mean, you should. I mean,
he's welcome to call in.
People like him don't talk to people like us.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand that.
Well, I've heard him on the radio here down a couple of times. He's talking to somebody down here.
Yeah, well, those are conservatives he's trying to pander to in order to get elected. He doesn't do that, or he probably would not do that with us. And I don't really want to talk to politicians because they lie, Jimmy.
Well, I mean, he's about the second most conservative after Ron DeSantis. I mean, why are you dissatisfied? I mean,
we're not conservatives, Jimmy.
Did you just ask why are you dissatisfied?
He did.
Yes.
Okay. Would you like to answer that, Pete?
I would love to. I would love to. So, now I don't fully approve of what DeSantis did in Florida, but comparatively, it was worlds and leagues better than what happened here in New Hampshire. In New Hampshire, we had the lockdowns. We had people's rights being absolutely for 2 weeks. And then they actually kept the narrative of it's a 2-week lockdown and then went, okay, it's over. Here, they didn't do that. Now, sure, in both cases, the rights were completely abrogated. They had under their own belief structure and legal structure no right to do what they did. But
I'm not defending Sununu, but here it wasn't a lockdown. It was a stay-at-home suggestion.
That's nonsense. Okay. That is absolute nonsense. You were not allowed to operate your business. And frankly, there is a certain amount
of convincing the population
that's true. That this is going on that means they will not go out because they fear being put in jail for going out and giving patronage to
businesses. But we
called
them on it, and we went out, and we violated the quote-unquote stay-at-home 2.0 or whatever it was called, and absolutely nothing happened to us.
The few of us that did that. Yes.
And that is what our problem with Sununu is, to put one major example of it, is because he is a conservative, as you put it, and not in any way, shape, or form libertarian.
Yeah,
he is a conservative authoritarian.
Even though he claimed in the recent documentary done by NBC News in Boston, NBCBoston.com/freestate, if you want to check it out,
dude.
He actually claimed to be a quote-unquote small L libertarian.
Yeah.
He's a liar is what he is. He's a politician. He's trying to appease the libertarians because he wants them to support him as well.
I just want to tell Jimmy that there is no one in any sort of office that I will respect who puts on the letterhead of anything coming from their office, from the office of His Excellency Chris Sununu.
Yeah, he takes credit for a movement while actively suppressing it. I mean, that level of hypocrisy is just extraordinary. So, we have a problem with him.
And dissatisfied, dissatisfied is an understatement.
What are you trying to say there, Jimmy?
No, I got the wrong impression. I heard him interviewed twice down here, and he sounded pretty good to me. You know,
what was sounding good about him?
Well, he sounded like about a half notch below Ron. You know, DeSantis.
So he sounds like a conservative.
This is what they do, though. They sound good to you when they speak. They talk to you about all of the bullet points that you think you want to hear
because
they make sense to make you feel good about it. And then they do the opposite.
Imagine believing what a politician says. Thank you, Jimmy, for the call tonight. I mean, you're just a dupe. If you still believe politicians after, I don't know how old Jimmy is, but he doesn't sound like he's 18.
Yeah, seems like he's over 40 anyway.
You know, you've been around on this planet for a few decades. If you've been paying attention, you should know by now that politicians cannot be trusted. Not the new generation, not the old generation. They're all lying scum.
Yeah, and I can see why Jimmy likes these people. He's a bootlicker. Mm-hmm. He believes in his heart of hearts in not only submitting to this rulership over you without your consent, but in expressing completely your submission.
Mm-hmm. Although, he's completely afraid, right? Like, he believes that if he does anything out of line, they're going to kill him.
Yeah.
And so he's completely into the system.
Well, and leave it to us in this show to rustle up a Jimmy.
Let's go to the phones here. Major Payne is on the line in Michigan. Go ahead, Major.
Yeah.
But
it's not but I heard Ian do it once tonight and once
I
yesterday.
Can't believe it's not but
But no, it's
you're showing your age, Major.
No, come on now. The Wizard of Oz is a classic.
That's
I don't
true.
Care how old you are.
What were you calling about?
But
there
anyway.
It is.
You guys were talking earlier about these dirty bombs coming in from Russia.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's the same thing they used to classify as a dirty bomb, the spent uranium crud.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it wasn't coming from Russia. It was coming from the UK. They're going to send these depleted uranium shells with the tanks that they're sending down to Ukraine.
Oh, all right. Well,
I'm glad you pointed it out because it is extremely similar to a dirty bomb.
Mm.
So a dirty bomb doesn't have a nuclear reaction, so it doesn't have that level of destructive force. But what it does is distribute radioactive materials. Mm. And in the same way, depleted uranium shells distribute radioactive materials.
These things have been heated to an insane degree. And what it does is it takes the heavy metals and it makes them like a parachute shape.
Hmm.
And it's the same crud they've been spreading on us for most of you boys' lives, ever since you can remember. The chemtrails That's all coal fly ash. That's heavy metal particulates.
Hey, don't worry. The Agent Orange is completely safe. You can drink it. It's fine.
Hey.
No.
Ground Zero is perfectly safe. The EPA has determined that the Twin Towers Ground Zero is perfectly safe to breathe.
I feel like this summer I'm going to make a nice pitcher of Agent Orange. You know? Just add a cup of sugar and a packet of special seasoning.
Yeah, like you remember when the Japanese official like drank the water coming out of Fukushima?
What happened to him?
Oh, he's dead.
You get this
he died almost immediately. Yeah, what do you think?
You get this like half melted face, like Kool-Aid guy, because he's irradiated now, crashing through. Going,
I think more politicians should do that.
You'd be nice, you know. Like I remember watching the like pretend sip that Obama took of the Flint, Michigan water. It's like, oh, your lips almost touched that water. It was amazing.
All right, mate.
LRN.FM.
Broadcast radio major. I'm sorry, my friend. You just can't say that. That's something you can say.
Yeah, sorry. I just had to.
Literally
I was
on
counting
the list, man.
I was counting the seven words. I'm like, wait, it's. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Usually people don't slip up on that one. That's. I don't know if I've ever even had to dump that particular one.
Major Payne is a talented individual when it comes to his verbal antics.
I'm going to let him call back, and he can say that later tonight on Beard Talk Live.
Beard Talk Live, call him back. You'll be on Sunday,
which is
Major.
Totally fine. Thank you, Major, for the call. That'll be tonight at 10:30 Eastern Time. You can watch it or listen on our video streaming platforms. Check out watch.freetalklive.com. Bookmark that page. That's our channel on Odyssey where the live streams happen. That's probably the best place to go and do it. But if you're on some of those other streaming services that we stream on, then you'll find it there too. That's tonight at 10:30 Eastern for Beard Talk Live. Let's go back to the phones here. Caller, you are on Free Talk Live. What's your name?
Hey, it's Tim from Florida.
Tim, you're on the air.
Hey, I was just thinking in about your situation and also Ari's situation, you know, with the sentencing coming up and all.
Yeah.
And that was awful what I heard you say the other day. And I'm glad the judge postponed it. That's really awful what they recommended.
You're talking about how the recommendation was 30 to 70 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
In this case, yeah.
Inhumane. Inhumane.
Well, and one of the things that I don't like about these sentencing postponements is, I mean, we are, a media program, right? We do media, we have podcasts, we're a radio show, we're, a video stream, globally, 170 radio stations, that kind of thing. So, like, we have the unique ability to make some noise about this kind of thing, as little as it seems to affect anything. But we do have that ability. What I don't like is the government is able to do this thing where they can, like, rule by time. And they can just sort of kick this can and kick this can and kick this can and kick this can until most folks, like, they're aware of it, but it's kind of, it's released from the news cycle, the thing everybody's all up in arms about recently. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, yeah, I remember that from a couple of, they're just finally getting around to that. Oh, that thing's like, and so, like, there's no more, we'll call it outrage about the situation, which to me is very sad.
Like when they have been recently admitting, okay, so yeah, the lab that literally studies these viruses is actually where this virus came from.
Like, and they, a bunch of people said and were banned for and deplatformed and disconnected and prevented from, making their money and doing their job if they're, like, reporters or activists and that kind of thing.
And have not been given back their right to, say, have a platform.
To some extent, it would be nice to just get it over with. But on the other hand, having an extra couple months or 3 months, I guess, in this case, because it's June 29th, so 2.5 months, gives people more time to write in because, people procrastinate, right? Oh, yeah, I'd like to write a letter, and then life happens and they get busy and then they forget about it. Oh, crap, is it too late? It's not too late. If you want to go to letters.freetalklive.com, we're actually getting close. I'm not keeping close count. I should have, but I didn't. So I think we're getting towards 100 letters. So thank you to everybody that has taken the time. It's been very, very nice to read. You don't normally get to find out the ways that you affected people's lives, right? Like, but that's happening here, and I get to read those things. So thank you. It's really, really a touching to go through your letters, and then we send them off to the judge. And so if you want to do that, please go to letters.freetalklive.com. The instructions are there as to how you can write to the judge in the case in the Crypto 6 for my sentencing. Go ahead.
I would like to point out that the extension of this is actually an intricate part of the punishment. Because as Arya is quick to point out, she doesn't know what's going to happen in her life.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Is she going to have access to human beings, or is she not going to have access to human beings? So every time they kick this sentencing down the road, they increase the period of time where there is this absolute uncertainty.
It's definitely stressful for Arya. There's no doubt about that. And it's no fun for anybody to not be able to start something new. You can't really be crazy, right? You can't start something new if you're just going to have it cut off unceremoniously 2 months later.
Yeah, and uncertainty is exactly how you develop anxiety about things. Even if there is a certain definite danger, that is less anxiety producing than an indefinite possibility of danger.
Tim, was there something else you wanted to comment on tonight?
Yeah. I just, I believe in having a backup plan, and I think it might be a good thing to, not just you, but also Arya, to have maybe a, what do you call it, give, send, go towards your commissary in the event that you are incarcerated. Because
I don't think I want to live into that future per se. I think that if that comes to be, then raising money for that is relatively simple.
We'll figure out how to take care of
it. Usually you don't get access to your commissary right away anyway. So it's like, you'd still have a whole week probably before you even had a chance to take a crack at it.
Right. But, you could end up, having a little bit of, a little bit of status within the prison if you have goods.
Thank you for the concern. Yeah. Like I said, I'm not worried about that, but I do appreciate
it's a kind
the
thought.
First step, let's get those letters in to try and sway the judge to be at least somewhat just in the sentencing.
Yeah. I mean, the best case scenario would be a time served sentence. Probably not going to be that likely. Maybe time served plus probation, I think, maybe a little more likely if we get really the best of the
let's hope
possibilities. We're coming up here. It is Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. We're kicking off the third hour here. Live Saturday show. Phones open if you want to join us at 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Joining you tonight is Ian.
Peakless Mountaineer.
And the Reverend Captain Kickass.
We'll take your calls about whatever's on your mind. Definitely want to get into the latest on the banking slow motion disaster that seems to still be unwinding and happening here. What the latest is, I know, Peakless, you wanted to talk about the Deutsche Bank, and I actually had that on my show prep as well, so we're definitely going to cover that one tonight. But first, to the phones and your calls and thoughts. Joe is in Florida, listening online. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, I just wanted to make a correction about the 2 weeks that Florida was shut down. It's actually false. We were shut down for at least 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah, and I didn't bother researching it beyond that because people that were saying Florida didn't shut down or only 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever, 6 months obviously blows out of the water.
Now, when you say shut down, can you describe what that meant for you there in Florida on the ground? What was that like?
Yeah, so I was actually a delivery driver, a food delivery driver at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was busy. I was like going to restaurants to deliver to people's houses, and restaurants were completely empty inside. Like some restaurants wouldn't even allow the driver to go in there and pick up the food.
Crazy.
We'd have to, use the drive-thru if there was one, or a pickup window something like that.
Contactless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was Executive Order 2068, obviously, in March of 2020, just in case someone wanted to actually look it up.
Thank you for that.
The beaches, this is all done by Governor DeSantis, by the way. He did this unilaterally. These are executive orders, and they're all online and all that stuff. Like I said, 2068 executive order. He had guidelines for people on the beach, like how many people you could have in your party on the beach. Gyms were shut down.
Remember that.
Bars were shut down. It goes on and on here. You had to be deemed a essential employee, which thankfully I was.
Yep.
Let me see here. I'm looking at the executive order right now. I'm trying to find the...
Let's just talk about the timeline then. So you said it went into effect March of 2020, right?
Yeah, March of 2020.
And this was the governor with an executive order. That means a piece of paper and a pen where he signed his name and said, yes, I am putting this into effect, regardless of whether or not anybody voted for it or it was put to the public in any way, shape, or form, right?
Yep.
Correct, 100%. I'm literally looking at his signature right now on the
Does it say His Excellency on there? I'm just curious.
Let me see here.
It's usually at the top, you know, from the office of.
Let me go up here.
Just curious, because that's what it says on the orders, the executive orders here in New Hampshire. Maybe it's like an old New England state thing,
maybe. And
it doesn't happen in, you know, some of the later joining states.
No, I think it's just self-aggrandization for Sununu, but.
No, I think it would be any governor in New Hampshire. So, anything like that on there?
No, it says on the top. It says State of Florida Office of the Governor Executive Order Number 2068.
Okay, all right.
So March of 2020. When did this order end, or has it?
He said 6 months.
Well, it was for 60 days, and then I looked it up 60 days later, and it was renewed for another 60 days under a different executive order number. I don't have that off my head, but it's in there. Yeah. And then 60 days from there was renewed with another executive order, all this unilaterally, for another 60 days. And beyond that, I just stopped researching it.
Okay, so that's how you got to the 6 months. Okay.
So at least 6 months. Could be longer.
Yeah.
Good work, man. Thank you.
As long as it took him to figure out that it would benefit him politically to roll this back and completely change his, you know, public persona on this to embrace the opposite, and that would get him some brownie points with his base. So then he decided to go in that direction.
Oh, yes. It's all propaganda. Like, there was a press conference he was doing where there was kids behind him wearing masks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is, like, when everything was kind of changing. He's like, oh, you don't have to. He knew he was, like, on a hot mic. He said, oh, you don't have to wear that. You can take them off right now. Just, you know.
I remember that clip. That was getting passed around. Oh, yeah, DeSantis, he's based, or whatever. He's a lying scumbag. Yeah.
It's amazing to me, and thank you for bringing all this up, because, like, people tend to forget these details.
He definitely wants you to forget this.
Yeah, and of course, the states, the governors, the politicians, the people who enforce this stuff want you to forget and go, well, it really wasn't that bad, and, like, I guess we made it through. And no, it was horrible.
We were
steps away from martial law in the United States of America. We were so close. The only thing missing was them deploying tanks and the military in the streets.
Joe, anything else you want to share tonight?
Yeah, it's just one more thing. Two more things. One more thing, there was Florida had a 14-day quarantine as well. We literally, if you were coming to the state of Florida, you had a quarantine for 14 days. One other thing is kind of like off topic here, but I actually talked to Nobody, who is, you know, one of your co-hosts there, on Twitter today. So if he's listening, I'm that guy he talked to Twitter on today.
Very cool. I don't know if he's listening, but he'll be in tonight. If you want to talk to him directly, he'll be on Beard Talk Live. We expect. Sometimes he doesn't show up, but you know, he's been more reliable.
He said he would be.
Okay, good. Well, then I expect him to show up. That'll be tonight at 10:30 Eastern over at watch.freetalklive.com. Thanks for the inside scoop there, Joe. I appreciate the call, man.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
And just to reiterate that point, so it is a natural human reaction when you experience trauma to suppress that memory because it is painful and it is difficult to integrate with your knowledge of the world and with your identity, your sense of self. So it's very easy to build that wall around the trauma because it is so hard to reconcile with the rest of your reality. So take the effort to not do that. So, like, I'm looking at this. Remember that they did close down the bars, the pubs, the nightclubs, the restaurants, the beaches.
Yeah, they did.
I make a point, and I made this point while I was back in Seattle hanging out with, like, musical people doing musical things, that they shut down art completely. Mm-hmm. I'm not even talking about just music.
Yeah.
Right, you couldn't
watch a movie,
book a recording studio. You couldn't watch a movie. You couldn't see a live band play. You couldn't see a community theater production.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't see a dinner theater. Right, none of this was going on. There was no art. They shut down art. There was
until
no music.
Porkfest 2020.
Well, okay, yes.
I believe
myself
you guys
and
played.
Aria and we call him Mushmouth Mike decided to play a set that we barely rehearsed.
But it was the best damn concert of the year.
It was the only concert. It was the only live music that I could tell was going on on July 4th anywhere in the United States. Like, everything was still shut down. Yeah. No one was being allowed, quote, and that's the key word. No one was allowed. And everybody's like, oh, well, now that the pandemic's over and things have gotten back, they haven't. They have not gotten back to normal. People just allowed these dictators, these governors, to go, some words on paper, okay, law, bypassing whatever semblance of, you know, minutia of law, of approval by any kind of the people or your representatives, bypassing that whole thing, making your entire political system a complete farce.
The checks and balances.
They didn't check anything. They didn't balance anything. And in fact, they formed more dictators than this country has ever seen before in all of history.
And the people went along with it.
That whole infrastructure of them being able to do that is still sitting there waiting for him to use it again. It'll happen again because you allow it.
That's right.
And here's the thing. A suppressed memory doesn't disappear. It stays there. Mm-hmm. It just never gets integrated. And they know that they have planted this in the minds of the people. So when they start talking about contagion, that's part of the reason that they want to do this, because people have set a special little sandbox in their mind where morals and logic do not apply,
right,
where human liberty does not exist, and where they accept the diktats of whoever decides that they are the tin pot dictator at the moment, so that when they do something like a central bank digital currency, when they do something like what they're setting up now that is going to be the pass-fail on their whim of which regional banks will be allowed to exist, and spoiler alert, fewer and fewer over time.
Yeah, you're right about the word contagion. What they're doing is a form of neuro-linguistic programming. Mm. And they're taking a word that you're already fearful of, right, from, quote, the pandemic, unquote, and they're taking this word contagion, and now they're applying it to things you see and read about banking.
Yeah.
And so you automatically, you've been programmed, believe it or not, you have been programmed, the listener to this program, you've been programmed that when you hear the word contagion, to have a certain level of fear of that word.
Danger.
And so now when you hear that word in relation to banking and cryptocurrency and all that kind of stuff, it is designed for you to have that association with fear when you hear that word. So that you are programmed to fear cryptocurrency.
And to seek the comfort of the authority.
Right.
All right, let's go to David. He's in Georgia. You're on Free Talk Live. David.
Hi. I was just listening to yesterday's episode about the Coinbase and the SEC and all this mess.
Yeah, and the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, going after the biggest of the big, Coinbase, the largest, I think, to my knowledge, cryptocurrency exchange in the United States, being threatened by Coinbase. Also, one of the top decentralized exchanges, SushiSwap, also being targeted by Coinbase. Justin Sun, the founder of the Tron cryptocurrency, and some of his promoters have been targeted, and it's just nonstop. They just keep on coming out with these threats. What
got excellent recall. I just want to say that.
What did you have to say about it, David?
Absolutely. And the more they keep doing this, the more they're going to push these companies either underground or out of the country. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, then they'll have no control at all over it. Like for example, I was just thinking, if I was to want to sell, say, Monero or give Monero to somebody in like Nigeria or like Mexico, I can't use the peso or the Nigerian Naira. So what I would have them do as a token of, hey, you're getting out of this system and into something better, would be to take, say, 1,000 pesos out of a bank and record a video of them burning it with fire and turning it into ash, and then send them the Monero for doing that action.
So you're paying them for a service.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Probably a crime. I know that I believe it's a crime to destroy money in the United States, so it wouldn't surprise me if it's a crime in other countries. So
some USD into a bonfire, that's
criminal.
You may be putting them in some jeopardy if I use it to
like wipe my butt first and then chuck it into the fire.
Possibly help you,
also
legally
illegal,
speaking.
Yeah,
and maybe stinky,
but it might be legal for you to wipe your butt with it.
Legal, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I'm not giving you legal advice, but
The destruction of it is still illegal.
You're not allowed to mutilate it, however, beyond a certain point. So as long as the serial number would be readable after you wiped your butt with it, Captain, I suspect it might be legal, but I'm not a lawyer, so you may want to check with one.
New Captain wipes. They're expensive.
And to speak to what he was saying about not pushing this overseas, not pushing this underground. So that is exactly why they're not telling you not to use cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
They're not telling you it's against the law to have a cryptocurrency business. They are enforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
They are absolutely saying, nope, that's illegal. But you told me it was legal. I got the paperwork and the documentation where you approved me to do this thing.
Right.
And they are enforcing it as if it were against the law. But they will never announce that it is against the law, because that would drive everyone in this industry beyond their reach.
Right. That would be like them applying, laws about radio to the internet. Two completely different mediums, one reliant upon a static connection, right? The other one reliant upon OTA broadcasts, over the air broadcasts, right?
Thank goodness the FCC has never pulled that one off.
Yeah. Well, but what I'm saying is cryptocurrency.
That's what they're doing in Ukraine, by the way. They're regulating the internet there.
Cryptocurrency is a new invention that deserves to be looked at as its own individual thing. Right, as a whole industry, yeah. A whole new invention, right? So to say that, it's just like every other, no, it's not. It's better than every other currency. And in fact, it does more than any other currency on planet Earth does. It can be programmed with features, unlike most state fiat currencies, in fact, all of them. They can't be programmed with features. They can only add a new stripe or change the way the printing is, mm-hmm. That kind of
thing. Well, since you mention it, the central bank digital currency that is currently in use in China, from my understanding, is quite programmable.
And that's
really the biggest problem with retail central bank digital currencies,
yeah.
Is that you can program them for things like, this can only
sure.
be spent on these things,
mm-hmm.
it will disappear after this period of time.
Right, the difference being, they are centralized, and cryptocurrency is decentralized. It's a huge thing. It's like saying, my car has wings, but it does not fly.
David, any other thoughts you want to share?
Yeah, just get your cryptocurrency as fast as you can when Biden and all the rest of these people come on the TV and say that, hey, the banking system is fine. That's when you need to get out, because that's the same thing they said in 2008.
Great point.
So get your
point.
Cryptocurrency yeah. while you can, because you don't want to be the one holding the bag when the U.S. dollar goes hyperinflation, and you need to get the heck out of Dodge.
Agreed. Thank you, David, for the call. I appreciate that suggestion. And if cryptocurrency is too scary for you, look into gold and silver. I specifically really like what they're doing over at the UPMA, the United Precious
yeah.
Metals Association. They're not an advertiser, but I really appreciate the work that they do. It's a members-based association of people that they've come together for the purposes of, sound money, basically. And you can purchase gold and silver from them. You can also buy gold backs from them. And something that Bonnie just tried out, and she hasn't gotten it yet, but apparently Alu Axelman has one of these things. They offer a debit card at UPMA. Now, the debit card's denominated in dollars, so it's
sure,
not
okay.
It's not a perfect creation, but
yeah.
it's a kind of a go-between having gold and being able to actually spend the gold.
Right.
So the way it works, as I understand it, and again, we haven't actually tried it yet, but you have an account there. Then you can order your gold to be converted into dollars and applied to this debit card. And then Then you can take the debit card to wherever.
Sure,
I don't know if it's Visa
it, right,
or yeah. MasterCard or whatever, but wherever it's accepted, then you spend your dollars.
And in theory, that's not a violation of any federal currency laws, because gold is still legally a currency in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
I don't know if it's a currency per se.
I
think it's probably
it
a commodity.
Its status as a currency is actually written into the Constitution.
Right.
Okay, well, under the definition of currency probably mostly used today by the government, it would not qualify
right,
as
so
a currency, because
what I'm
currency
getting at,
is only a government money.
What I'm
That's
getting
why Bitcoin's
at,
not a currency.
What I'm getting at is that, unlike, let's say, the Liberty dollar, right, von mm-hmm. Nothaus's creation, right,
yeah.
This is just regular-ass gold from a regular-ass gold dealer. They're just offering a new product, a new way to spend your gold, right? So they're offering a gold debit card is what it sounds like to me, based on your explanation.
Yeah,
so you hold, you know, I buy $1,000 worth of gold. In theory, I got a $1,000 limit on my debit card, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. I can go out and, you know, use my debit card wherever debit cards are accepted and buy whatever, right?
In theory.
Thereabouts. Yeah. So it's about time. I mean, this is a great invention.
They've had this for a while, apparently.
Really? Yeah. I don't much like this, honestly. So the reason that I don't care for this is that you're talking about paper gold. So when I want gold, I want in my hand tangible gold. Well, and this isn't a small thing. The suppression of the price of gold is because they can print up all of this paper gold
that does not actually have a backing
to it.
In this case, UPMA does audits, and there really is, you know, gold in a vault. The real risk is government seizure. So the you know, whether that's going to happen or not, it could. It's happened in the past. They certainly did it to the Liberty Dollar.
Right.
They went in there and they swooped in and they stole all of their precious metals from their vault. And it's the one thing you can't insure against.
Right. And you have a centralized location where all of this exists.
Yeah.
Whereas, say, goldbacks, for example, exist distributed throughout New Hampshire and beyond.
Yeah, no doubt.
But if you are keen, no pun intended, to get out of the USD and into alternative currencies, gold and silver are still technically alternative currencies to the USD. Any precious metals, UPMA, United Precious Metals Association, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So now you have an alternative to use, a spendable alternative. So for those times when, like, I'm keen to check out of the USD as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I have very little USD at my disposal. I could go get some if I need it, right? But I'd rather not. In this case, if I needed it, now I can tap into gold and spend that as dollars instead of tapping into anything else.
Well, I get your point, Peekless. There's no safe system, right? Like, there's no safe anything. If you've got dollars in your house could catch fire. They could burn up, right? If you've got cryptocurrency, you could lose or forget the password or the seed phrase or whatever, and then you'll never get access to that again. And the vault at UPMA could get raided by the government. So, I mean, none of these things are perfect.
Well, it's not just a question of safety. It's also a question of the morality, because you are contributing to the manipulation system.
With UPMA. They're audited.
Well, all manner of paper gold is a contribution to this paper gold system
by which they suppress the actual price of gold. That's only true if it's a non-transparent black box like JP Morgan or something that's selling you quote unquote gold
paper
on paper
gold, right?
And you can't actually go and see the vault and audit it for yourself. With UPMA, it is a members organization, and they actually have regular third-party audits. The board members themselves, and I believe any member can go there and tour the vault. So, like, this isn't some sort of BS where they're selling you gold on paper. This is, you actually have gold in a vault with, you know, your name on it, basically.
Well, I mean, you gotta pick who you trust, but it is exactly that. It is trust. And, I mean,
of course,
you trust that they are not printing out more paper gold certificates than they actually have gold in
the
vault.
But verify. If you want to verify it, you can verify this.
Well, I don't trust. I verify.
Okay.
Well, and that's why I love the blockchain, is because there is no trust there.
You can get a ticket to Alpine and go and, you know, talk to them and tour their vault. I think they let anybody do it. I can't say for sure on that, but I'm pretty sure anybody can.
A well-designed fake is almost indistinguishable from the real thing. And so from my perspective, look.
Goldbacks are pretty hard to fake.
Yeah, right? I'll give you that. Well, from my perspective, though, if you're going to be willing to take that step of having non-tangible gold,
mm-hmm.
then why not take the other step of having blockchain verified non-tangible gold?
Well, the reason I brought it up was
that you can then turn into dollars when you want to spend
it. Sure. The reason I bring it up is because some people don't want to get into cryptocurrency.
Mm.
I understand that for you, it's pretty easy. But for somebody out there, if they're, you know, 65 years old or whatever, and they've got some savings that they've earned through their whole lives, and they don't want to keep it in the dollar, and they're like, I don't know about this crypto thing, it's just too complex. Because it can seem a little complicated, right? Like, when you try to get into cryptocurrency, as easy as they've made it compared to 10 years ago. Yes. It's certainly easier now, but it's still a really complex
process. There's
still
a nerd factor to adoption of cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I mean, we've got this nice lady that comes in to our crypto meetups here in Keene. She's been coming for years, and she always needs her hand help with, you know, doing some of the most basic things, even though she herself has been into it for probably 5 years now at this point. There's just some people that it's at least not yet, not made for. So for those folks, I recommend upma.org. More coming up. Free Talk Live, the live Saturday show. The phones are open and you can join us at 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Joining you tonight, it's Ian.
Peakless Mountaineer.
And the Lord Reverend Captain Kickass is here.
We've been covering the banking crisis, disaster that many would, you know, point out was completely predictable.
I was going to say, I'd like to call it the banking eventuality.
Yeah. And
it really is.
And we touched briefly on it earlier in the show tonight when we were talking about Europe. And I think you mentioned, Peakless, that the European banking cartel, the central bank there, has basically been doing the same playbook that the United States has, which is to say they printed out a ton of euros during COVID for bailouts and things like that. We just saw them print up, I think it was 800 billion euros to bail people out for their power bills over the last several months. And so, like, they're constantly printing all this money, and then they decided to raise interest rates to, quote-unquote, fight inflation, which is what we've seen the Fed doing here. And so, presumably, their bonds that they've been issuing, like the Fed Treasury bonds here, have been going down in value because of the raising interest rates, putting their banks in a real tight squeeze. There's a gentleman I've been following on social media, Peter St. Ange. He's a PhD. And I believe he is with the Mises Institute. He's been putting out daily videos on the topic of the banking situation. And I thought this one was interesting because apparently the next one to potentially fall is Deutsche Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a biggie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you want to talk about globally important systemic banks. Like, this is like, every time that I have seen some kind of like chart or workaround of like, here's what the European banking system looks like and how their connections work and what relies on what, dead center.
It's the big hub.
Dead center is Deutsche Bank.
I'm going to just jump into this here, and I'm sure you'll have a few things to say about it, Peakless, since you've been following this pretty closely as well. This is his post he made today at his Twitter, at Prof. Stange, Stonge.
I was going to say O-N-G is the spelling for those listeners.
Yeah, so here we go.
Hey, guys. So it looks like Germany's biggest bank, Deutsche Bank, is in trouble. It's so bad, even Jim Cramer likes it. Why? The short answer is that, like all big banks, Deutsche Bank is a fraction reserve bank, meaning it is permanently bankrupt. It does not have the cash. So the slightest morsel of risk can cause a panic. In fact, that risk came by the truckload these past couple of years when the ECB printed trillions of euros to finance COVID lockdowns and then yanked interest rates up to cover up the inflation. Of course, the Fed did the same thing, as did the Bank of Japan, really all major central banks. Note, this was also what crashed Silicon Valley Bank, bond losses from Fed hike. And it's a widespread problem, so there may be more banks to come. So what if Deutsche does collapse? Now, Deutsche Bank is gigantic. It's about seven times bigger than Silicon Valley Bank. Relative to the German economy, Deutsche is more like 35 Silicon Valley banks, or a pair of JP Morgans, if you prefer. Yes, banks are bigger in Europe because regulators in Europe serve the banking oligopoly even more enthusiastically than we do in the US, although we are catching up. Now, in the EU, bank closures work pretty much like they do in the US. So you get a combination of the central bank and government deposit insurance. And they have three options: close it, sell it, or bail it out. Now, Deutsche is too big to close. It's the fourth biggest bank in Europe, so that's not going to happen. Deutsche is also too big to sell off in little pieces. So they'd have to push a shotgun wedding like what they did in Switzerland last week, where you force another bank to buy the failed bank. Now, finding a husband is tricky because Deutsche Bank is so big, and EU regulators like to keep it the family. They like to keep foreign banks out. So it may have to be a European bank, and there are really only three in the EU that are bigger than Deutsche Bank, none of them famously well run. So that brings us to the most likely scenario, a bailout, ideally one that's hidden from voters, which probably means either a huge line of credit, free, freshly printed euros, or a so-called bail-in where depositors take a haircut to keep up appearances, but taxpayers foot the rest. In practice, given Deutsche's size, you'd probably expect a combination of the two, so a shotgun wedding paired with a bailout, like with Credit Suisse, where the central bank forced UBS to marry Credit Suisse. But
which, by the way, as I understand it, UBS is also still in difficult straits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
once the
absorption, and that's what the only name that I can give it, right? They absorb a bank, right? Once that occurred, the big sucking sound you heard was their stock tanking.
Mm-hmm.
As the absorption occurred, and it still hasn't recovered.
Yeah, so I really have to emphasize here a very fundamental economic principle.
Yes.
You cannot get rid of risk. It cannot be done. You can move it.
Mm-hmm.
You can move the risk from here to there. So our entire system has said, well, we'll just distribute the risk so that no one major bank falls. It'll just be either the entire system or none of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guess what that means ultimately happens eventually, sooner or later. And okay, well, it's been 100 years of this system, and might I add only like 30 years of the entire globe being on fiat currency.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, Switzerland was the last ones to go to fiat, and they went in like 92 or 94.
Wow.
Yeah, just that recently. So you cannot get rid of risk. You can move it around. So all of the risk that just got moved from Credit Suisse is now in this bigger bank.
And when you say risk, are you talking about the risk of a bank run or other types of risk?
Yeah, risk of the bank run is definitely the biggest one. But there's also credit risks, and there's the risk on whether people will pay their mortgages in all these mortgage-backed securities. The risk of whether the government whether the central bank will have to continue hiking rates to try and fight inflation, and whether that will bring all of the value of their assets plummeting
down even further. And of course, we did see the Federal Reserve raised rates again. Yep. I think it was earlier this week, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Another 0.25.
Quarter point.
They're not going to stop.
Well, some people think this is the last one.
I don't think so.
Okay, so I don't think this is the last one.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't think that they're going to hike this next one because of what Powell said when he announced the rate hike.
They're going to like take a week off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're going to take a cycle off on this one. He said it doesn't look like we're going to have to increase it moving forward. So based on that, he's probably just, to save face, unless something crazy happens, he's probably just going to keep it right where it is at the next hiking cycle and then hike after that.
Mm. Let me get a little bit more here from the professor.
They also tossed in $100 billion to sweeten the pot. Just want to check my mic. Now, we don't know if Deutsche will actually fail. The EU is famous for paying to hide problems. So Deutsche could still get some free money to let it limp along, to make bigger problems in the future. Given how dishonest the EU is, that seems very on brand. But if Deutsche does get as far as Credit Suisse did, then you should expect massive bailouts funded ultimately by the money printer, in other words, by inflation. So EU voters will pay, whether in taxes or in their draining life savings. Mm. At which point the question would turn to contagion. Is this going to spread to other countries? Are there more dominoes to fall? Okay, we'll be watching it all. See you.
Indeed. Thank you for that update.
Yeah, so one of the things that's happening right now in terms of the American dollar is that, so there's been this big clash of titans, right? Because they are, in fact, bringing in central bank digital currencies. But the question is, what kind of global system of control are they going to have?
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be a corporate control system or a government control system? Which basically comes down to, are these central bank digital currencies going to be backed in what's called special drawing rights, which is Bank of International Settlements, World Bank production, or are they going to be backed in dollars, which is a U.S. corporation production? So they've been just going head-to-head on this thing, and I mean, as near as I can tell, Europe basically just said uncle, because they opened this window when Credit Suisse fell,
mm-hmm.
where like, okay, you can... So, like, in the American system, you can, like, admit that you screwed up, go to this rebate window, as it's called.
The discount window?
Yes. The discount window. Yeah. Now, that's they call it the walk of shame, mm-hmm. because you basically have to admit that you screwed up, kind of like how Silicon
Valley. When you say
Valley,
you're talking about bankers.
Yeah. A bank, right?
You're talking about commercial banking.
Exactly. The bank mm-hmm. has to basically admit that it didn't allocate its resources correctly, and now it needs immediate help. But
at a higher rate.
Right. In the process, they're going to have to take what they call a haircut. So they're going to have to take a loss on some of this money that's coming in. So the same thing just got set up in this bank transfer thing between Europe and America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the same rate of this rebate window. So essentially, Europe kind of admitted, okay, we are now a subsidiary of the Fed. So now
I see what you're saying, in effect,
right. So now that's over with. So it's been whack-a-mole for the Fed. So like gold prices were jumping up because of the actions of Russia. So they had to work really fast to cram down those gold prices before they like just rocket up above 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, well, we'd like to make it a government central bank digital currency. So they've had to switch their attention to the European Central Bank, which is also like World Economic Forum organized and that sort of a thing. And okay, well, now that they've whacked that mole down, they are switching their attention over here to cryptocurrency, and most especially to stable coins.
They're on an all-out attack against stable coins.
Exactly, because that is our job. Mm-hmm. Only we get to print dollars. And that was basically the fight with Europe, was they were doing the effect of printing dollars in the so-called Eurodollar market, which is just offshore dollar markets, and they're like, no, that's our job, you don't get to do that, we're taking the LIBOR rate and we're doing a SOFR rate, to get sort of off in the weeds for
this
a second.
Is what I love, if there's something to love in this all-out war against the stable coins,
mm-hmm.
it is because there is sort of this, you know, we'll call it a war on stable coins from the governments, from mm-hmm. the fiat currency, from the central banks. All it does is it plays right into the Buckminster Fuller quote that I love, which is, mm-hmm. you never change the existing reality by fighting it. You change the existing reality by building something that does it better and faster and more efficiently than the previous system. You basically build a new system that outperforms the old one. So since the Federal Reserve, the central banks, and the governments are going after the stable coins, what that means is that they have succeeded in building a better, faster, and more efficient version of what they do.
They have, and that's mm-hmm. why they put Do Kwon, who is the creator of Terra, which was the world's most successful until it failed, stablecoin last year. It had a tremendous mm-hmm. failure in May of last year, $40 billion just worth of value just completely wiped away. They put him in handcuffs this week, and he's going to expect it to be extradited to South Korea and then presumably the United States to face criminal charges in both of those countries, the U.S. bringing charges just hours after his arrest.
And he's the worst criminal from their perspective, because he didn't even use U.S. treasuries to back it. So like the way that these stable coins work, they take these treasury notes that have, you know, a yield on them, mm-hmm. like a savings account, only actually a decent amount. And they get enough treasuries to back their dollars. So it's these dollar equivalents.
Right.
And then they rake in the interest, and that's how they pay their bills and run their company.
Yeah.
So at least that helps the Fed print money, because it generates demand for these treasuries. So, okay, well, you at least helped us out a little, so we'll get around to destroying you utterly. Yeah. Do Kwon, on the other hand, oh no, he used cryptocurrency to back it. He didn't even help them print money,
right.
So he is public enemy number one on this thing.
Yeah, and they're accusing him of fraud and all this, and it's just so ridiculous. I mean, the guy just created something.
Yeah.
He made some code that had a flaw. I don't think he knew that it had this, that it, you know, was going to fail in the spectacular way. That he named his child Luna, which was the name of his coin.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was a true believer in what he did, and it's sad what's going on on with him. But yeah, and you make me wonder, though, about Coinbase, because mm-hmm. we know that the SEC earlier this year went after, just a few weeks ago, went after Binance USD, which was the number three largest stablecoin right. by market volume
yep.
and or market cap. And they basically have destroyed Binance USD. They went after Paxos, which was the issuer. It was sort of the exchange they were using to create. For whatever reason, they didn't want to do it themselves. So yeah. they had Paxos do it here in the U.S. Binance is an international exchange.
Because Paxos had been doing this. They had the infrastructure. Doing this stuff.
Sure. Yeah. And they were based in New York, and they had jumped through all the hoops. You know, Paxos was a completely compliant, regulated entity. Didn't save them. The SEC came after them, and the New York Department of Financial Regulation came after them and said, you will not issue any more of these. And then they broke up their agreement with Binance, and so now they're basically, the thing still exists, but no one is making new ones. Right. And mm-hmm. so when they get cashed in, they're never going to get made again. So that one's dead, mm-hmm. essentially, dead in the water, which leaves two other biggies. There's USDC, the Circle / Coinbase one, right. and mm-hmm. then USDT, which is the top dog, called Tether. Is part of the SEC coming lawsuit against Coinbase going to be in regards to USDC and their participation in the second largest stablecoin? Because it's good obvious question. That they're going to go after them for staking, because that's what they went after Kraken for. But Kraken didn't have its own stablecoin. So I'm wondering if that's going to be part of this whole attack on Coinbase, is not only do you need to stop doing staking, but you need to stop doing
well,
USDC.
Well, here's a question for...
Because it's a quote-unquote security mm-hmm. is
yeah,
what they said.
Yeah, you're giving value to this dollar alternative.
Yeah. Here's a question for sort of the lay people to ask themselves, because you know, we're talking about some pretty heady stuff. If you've not done any investing of any kind, if you've not gotten into crypto or even gold and silver to that matter, like most people, they want to make their money. They want to save some. They want to put it in a bank, you know, maybe do an IRA or some, you know, some mm-hmm. kind of thing for their retirement and just watch it grow, right? That's all regular ass people want.
Yeah.
Right. So for them to hear all this terminology and everything, the question that I think they need to ask themselves is this. If all these cryptocurrency companies and all these people are targeting, like you, for example, Mr. Freeman, if what they were doing was so criminal, why did they allow it to go on for more than a decade?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Ain't that a question? No, that actually was important to the ruling when Voyager was attempting to get bought up. And the SEC is like, well, no, part of the money that they made was in these unregistered securities. And the judge went, okay, but you should have like filed against them while they still existed and were making money off of this. Mm-hmm. You can't come along now and say, well, we were gonna file against you.
Yeah, I could have come along, started a decentralized cryptocurrency exchange, or even a centralized one for that matter, because that would have been easier, right? Start mm-hmm. a centralized cryptocurrency exchange, did a whole bunch of transactions, and then shut the exchange down within a year, right? Got my money, GTFO'd, and that would have been it. And the government would have been like, well, you know, we can do now. It's gone, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on how bad they want you. I mean, Do Kwon's thing blew up a year ago, but mm-hmm. they still wanted him, and they got him. I mean, he was hiding out in Montenegro trying to cross the border with a fake ID that he'd gotten, I don't know where, but, you know, and then they arrested him.
Well, I'm just saying there exist several cryptocurrency companies that have come and gone.
Come and gone, sure. Yeah,
in that duration. And
they're probably not thinking about that. Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so handful of quick things, just boom, boom. China didn't actually do the same thing as Europe was doing and the Fed, so he was a little bit mistaken on that, which is why the bank runs started on them. They had, like, the East had to deal with these bank runs far before the rest of us started. Mm-hmm. Like, this has been a continuing collapse. It's just been a very slow motion thing. Mm-hmm. So it looks like Deutsche Bank is going to either collapse into its own Twin Tower footprint or get bought up by this Sparkassen Finance Group, is my best guess.
Who's that?
They're the actual biggest bank in Germany.
Oh, really?
Even though Deutsche Bank always gets called the biggest bank in Germany.
He said it was number four.
Yeah, it's They frequently call it the biggest bank in Germany. Mm-hmm. I think that mostly has to do with like its connections and its how important it is systemically to all of these others. And by the way, whenever either of those happens, it is going to cause immense chaos through France, Spain, the rest of Germany. Like this is this, either of these happening, the bailout or the wedding or both is going to bring down a lot of destruction on the European banking system. And that is probably going to have this, you know, contagion back over here. Another thing, just real quick. So when they took out the largest backing in a single bank of a stable coin, the largest single chunk of backing.
You're talking about
what?
Silicon Valley Bank?
Yes,
with
when they took
USDC?
Out Silicon Bank, and it was a takedown, make no mistake. Yeah. This was not an accident. This was a takedown. And when they took it down, guess what? USDC is right back at a dollar.
It is, yeah.
Takes a licking and keeps on ticking. So their best swing is not even taking this thing out. And this is very important. So all of these attacks that they're making are on centralized structures.
Yes.
Because that's all they can attack.
Well, they just went after a DAO. Sushi DAO was attacked by the SEC.
Yeah, good luck, guys.
And that's because, well, according to what I read, they did some level of centralization of their DAO, meaning that their programmers are known, so they can target those individuals. They obviously cannot target every member of the DAO because there are anonymous people there, but what they could target, they apparently did target.
Yeah,
in that
and
case.
Great. Good on you. Clear up our garbage, because they are claiming to be decentralized. If they are actually decentralized, then you may as well start shooting at ghosts, because this isn't going to hurt them. You're going to take out this chunk, and because it's actually decentralized, it won't take them down. Whereas if they are centralized, good. They are fraudulent in what they're advertising.
Yeah. Good point.
Take out the fraudsters. So like this is actually a mechanism to help us keep everything decentralized, which is what we want.
Yeah, the OG crypto community warned against all of the centralization, specifically with regards to exchanges, particularly in the wake of Mt. Gox, right? And is one of the reasons why, like, a bunch of OG crypto coiners, Bitcoiners, have always had sort of a hate on for things like Coinbase, Coinbase being the biggest exchange of them all. Because they are centralized, they are partnering with the banks, they are engaging in these fraudulent practices that regular banks engage in on a daily basis without persecution. On a daily basis without persecution, these regular banks engage in these fraudulent activities. Look it up. It exists. I'm not lying to you.
Yeah, where do you think Sam Bankman-Fraud learned all of this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
He learned it
from
play
watching
for
you.
Play from exactly what our system is already built on that we are forced to interact
yeah,
with.
Yeah, he went, oh, well, what do banks do? Oh, well, I'll just do that. And then, poof.
Of course, the banks don't face criminal charges.
Right.
They get bailed out.
That's exactly it. And man, that timing was convenient. Mm-hmm. This really effective way of tunneling all this money from Zelensky to the Democratic National Party just happens to get taken down right after we're done voting.
Huh.
Huh.
And right before the big bank crisis. Speaking of the European Central Bank, did you guys hear about this? These Russian pranksters that pretended to be Zelensky and managed to get the head of the European Central Bank on a conference call to say things that she thought were in private to Zelensky.
Just like crank yankers? Like style,
but
like,
without the comedy, basically. Like this is.
It's
called a prank in that they fooled her, but they were very serious issues they were talking with her
so
about.
So I'm honestly concerned that I might get taken in again by a deep fake, because like from what I haven't seen the whole tape, but from what I was seeing, it looks like their side of this conversation might be completely faked, but they took like actual footage of her conversation with, I mean, maybe Zelensky, maybe someone else,
right? Yeah.
And
this gets done in audio all the time. There's existing audio of a famous person.
This is video of her talking.
Yes, I mean, right. Audio and video.
Could but be deep fake, but that at this point that, is fairly difficult.
That this happens frequently in audio where it's like, I'm asking a question that me and this other person have never been in the same room, and then we play some audio of them answering the question from something that was recorded some time ago.
Like, it definitely does seem to be her in this video.
You've
tape.
Seen it?
Yeah, some of it, not all of it. It definitely seems to be her. It's a little, bit too much of the information that I have unfortunately learned about this horrible woman. It seems to be her on that side, but whether the other side of it is completely faked, I don't know.
Well, we know that they supposedly pretended to be Zelensky. It's not clear how. Presumably, they did use some sort of deep fake live, change your face to Zelensky kind of tech, would be my guess on how they did this, because that is possible today. You can do that real time. And so it's pretty interesting stuff. One of the things she said, according to Kim.com, who watched it, is that what's the maximum inflation you expect for the EU this year? She said it's hard to predict. 7% is on the low side, probably higher. I know that interest rates will continue to rise inevitably. We won't manage to tame inflation if the interest rates don't go higher. Powell and I talk, is essentially what she said. So if that's true, you can expect the interest rates here to do something similar. We'll see you tomorrow. Some of you have wanted to support Free Talk Live's mission on a monthly basis, but don't want to support Patreon. Now we have an alternative that also helps our premier streaming platform, Odyssey. Visit video.freetalklive.com and click join at the top of the channel. You can subscribe for $5 per month, and unlike other subscription services, Odyssey adds their processing fee on top, so it'll cost a little over $5 per month, but Free Talk Live will receive the entire amount you pledged. Higher donation tiers are available if you're feeling so inspired. You'll get a special membership badge that's visible in the Odyssey chat room, and if we get enough supporters, we may enable members-only chat. This new subscription method is a great way to decentralize our direct listener support away from just Patreon and also support a libertarian-run business, Odyssey. Please visit video.freetalklive.com and click join to subscribe to our Odyssey channel and help support spreading our message around the planet. Visit video.freetalklive.com and click join today.